There can be no other than to celebrate three. No need to change. Keep it tuned to City.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning, my neighbor.
Good morning to life.
Good morning.
Music. Talk. Inspiration. In perspective.
Express yourself. Good morning, my neighbor.
City FM, your station.
It's a refreshing lifestyle.
City FM. 7.3.
There's a song that we sing in our church in New York, Perfecting Faith Church. It's about an every Sunday song. Listen, I don't need you to get tired now. I need those of you that want to help us stand up on Sunday.
Unleashing the power of relevant radio. This is City
97. He has a name that's above every name.
The City Breakfast Show. Rise above the noise.
I call you home. Your name is holy. You are so holy to me. Somebody say,
I call you holy. Your name is holy. Holy you are, and holy you be.
Come on, I want you to raise your voice all throughout this room. Let the world hear you here from the right church.
The City Breakfast Show, the city's biggest conversation.
Yes, 26 minutes past 6. It's the penultimate day of the month of April. The Reverend Donnie McClurkin. I call you holy. I call you faithful. I call you awesome. I call you healer. What do you call him? What has he done in your life? What's your experience of him? What you call him is what he will be to you. I don't know what you need this morning. It can be that and more. It can be all that and more. Starting the show with Business Sense, brought to you by ADB. Great leaders must learn to balance extremes. This morning, there are two extremes I want to bring to your attention. You must be both caring and competent. A great leader is both caring and competent. The care side answers the question, do they care for me? Can I trust them? But the competent side also says, can they help me? Now, those three questions must be answered correctly if your leadership has been approved for change. So, can they trust you? Can you help them? Do you care for them? A caring leader makes people's lives better. A competent leader helps people do better. And a trustworthy leader is consistent within words and actions. What is true of leaders is true of companies. Or brands or businesses. Can they trust you? If you certify a product as having been finished, can they use it? Can you help them make their life better? What problem are you solving? And do you care genuinely about your customers? It's an everlasting question for individuals and businesses looking for success and relevance. Beautiful combination of competence and compassion. Oh yes. I think on these things, as we say thank you to ADB for being the People's Bank, for supporting Agric, for giving loans up to 6 years tenor, great reduced interest rates, accessible on phone 030-221-0210. ADB, truly Agric and more.
This is the City Breakfast Show, the city's biggest conversation.
Join the conversation on the City Breakfast Show on Facebook at facebook.com/city97.3, Twitter at twitter.com/city973, and Instagram at instagram.com/city973 with the hashtag CityCBS.
The blackness.
Sounds of blackness. Be optimistic. Keep at it. Hope for the best. City Breakfast Show is live and airborne. Newspaper reviews where we start off from. My name is Bernard. Thank you for staying with us. This segment is brought to you by Fidelity Bank. We're partnering with Pan African Payment and Settlement System, the PAPS, to help you send money to your loved ones or business partners across the continent instantly and in local currency. Don't wait for days for transactions to clear. It's fast, it's secure, it's affordable. Visit any of our branches today to send money to Nigeria, to Liberia, to Gambia, to Guinea, Sierra Leone, and across the African continent. And of course, we're sponsored by Total Energies Ghana PLC, the trusted OMC since its induction to the CIMG Hall of Fame, for being adjudged Petroleum Company of the Year for 3 consecutive years. By the CIMG, we've retained our membership of the CIMG Hall of Fame. We're committed to delivering quality and innovative products to enhance customer experience. With great pride, we dedicate these awards to our valued customers. Thank you for your unwavering trust in the Total Energies brand. Monday morning, Mr. Good morning to Caleb Kuda.
Good morning, Bernard.
And to Nathan Kwao.
Hello, good morning.
How are you guys doing?
Yeah, we're all right.
All right.
Hope you had a great weekend.
Oh, yes. Hey, but wait, Bernard.
What happened?
Community 25, no? The DevTraco side, no?
Charlie, I traveled to Akosombo on Saturday morning.
Yes.
And I used Community 22.
My God.
And then on my way back, there was so much traffic, I had to use some Lungus to appear at 25. And I was asking myself, isn't there a better way of organizing our spaces?
It's a trap problem.
I mean, you know, to have a bad road is one thing. And then to have 1 hour in traffic is another thing. And then to have, like, the connecting routes just not making sense. If I lived in those places...
Oh, no. And you work in town,
I don't know. It's terrible. It's I mean, listen, Oh, my God.
I don't know if the work is also progressing. I didn't see the moving machines.
You know, the only place you see work is the Tema interchange itself.
Yeah.
So when you get to Tema and you're going, you make a right and do a U-turn.
Yeah.
You can see some work happening slowly. But... And the other thing is, I've been to Akosombo many times. There were about 4 traffic joints. In the past, you just get a little traffic at the Ashaman runabout and then one at Afariwa.
Yeah.
This one, even Afienya, there's traffic. Oh, there's traffic at Bechile Junction, Mataheko. Like, the traffic is in chains.
It's terrible. You know? So, the weekend was the birthday, 70th birthday of Nina Victoria Arabella Nana Araba Crab. And this is Clement Akapam's mom.
So they have names like VCRAC crap.
Yeah, so they said, oh, come to 25. Me, I thought it's when just I get to that summer, I just take like this and enter the Tema.
You were in traffic.
Oh!
And Saturday.
It's terrible.
It's actually, it's funny. I don't know whether it's worse on Saturdays.
I guess.
People, you see, people go to funerals on Saturday.
It was terrible.
But even as I speak to you, the people in traffic will tell you whether you live in 25 or 22.
Yeah.
And you know, the real estate there is great.
Yeah.
It's a good place to live, but the road.
The quality of the road. So even the alternative roads through the communities.
You know, we did some left through MF Estate.
Oh, Lord.
Pass on Lungulungu.
No.
Went to appear at DPS International. No. We got to Ivy Odro's area. No, we didn't know where to turn. Chaka.
It's not fair.
No.
The development must catch up with the people there.
No, the development is far behind. But you know the funny thing, though? The train goes through that area. And I was wondering if like the train was working. So if assume you live at Afienya, you live at Bechile, you live at all those areas, if the train would be a passenger train to pick you and drop you, say, at Tema.
And they would reduce the traffic.
I don't know. It's Nathan. No. When you are going to Akosombo, we'll go by helicopter.
All right, let's
Ghanaian
start
Times.
Off.
Okay. Yes, good. Yes, so Ghanaian Times is raising concerns. Flood alert. Shows photos of the stream at Wager, which is choked with weeds, and they are demanding that it's cleared quickly before the rains set in. And Dr. Baumia begins nationwide campaign. Trade Minister woos U.S. business leaders to Ghana. These are the stories. All right. Ghanaian Times.
The Daily Guide says MMDCEs hail education transformation. Asante Hene at 25, Ghana Post to unveil special stamp.
Yeah,
there's a picture of Bai Sosei Kufuor here talking about it. MPA boss re-elected African Refiners Distributors President.
Right.
And the Kufado is telling Yagbonra, help make 2024 elections peaceful. And Nana Baumia storm Ejesu.
Changing face of education marvels MMDCEs after a comprehensive presentation by Educhum. That's Chronicle newspaper. Suspected killer of women in police grip. High court chair fails integrity test and the re-election of the AR. The African Refiner story is here as well.
Okay. Yeah.
All right, the Herald says MPP MP tells Akufo-Addo to be transparent, wants KPMG report on GRA SML deal released. Education Minister names schools to be painted, but APAC Dahia Mekbro maintain lack of priority. And MPP sitting uneasy over tomorrow's by-election in Ejisu and Giba. Wades into petrol bomb attack on Class Media Group.
Publish the full KPMG report. Minorities demanding. This is the Daily Searchlight. And veteran broadcaster Joe Latte passes on age 96. And then 2024 election. Dr. Baumia starts nationwide campaign. That story is captured here as well. As well as the NPA CEO's release.
All right.
All the papers have the one.
Yeah, the Inquisitor says dangerous and reckless precedent. Sabotage among road contractors.
We have, we have to enter that story. Mm. I'm interested in that story.
Very, very much so.
Yes. Ghana records average of 9,900 snake bites annually.
Wow.
That's almost 10,000.
Wow.
In other stories, the Asante Hennis commemorative stamp is here. And Godfred Oparijan is writing.
Mm-hmm.
He says, the shadows of competent, versatile Napo and the enemies within.
Come on.
You know, Rollins said something about the enemy within.
Yeah, man.
Sometimes they are more vicious than the opponent without.
Yes.
I tell you.
The new publisher. So, Akufo-Addo not changing school uniforms to blue and white, education ministry clarifies, comes with a photograph of the president and the education minister, who himself is in a blue and white shirt. But Kenya, Benin, Ivory Coast, Tom Winneba for Osimpa Marathon 2024, starting a national campaign tour in Dumso when transportation fares have gone up by
pet.
New publisher.
It's not easy.
Yeah, all right, the Republic Presses, EC, Imani clash over BVDs.
Mm.
Guta calls for Dumso timetable. Ex-Black Stars captain Steven appeared to contest Ayawa Suwe's wagon seat as independent candidate.
Mm.
EC refutes Mohammed's claim of recruiting MPP members as returning officers.
Mm.
And police officer and seven others in court for engaging in a $523,000 gold scam.
Right. So the new finder says Ghana and dire need of huge investments in energy, agri raw materials production. This is Michael Harry Yamson speaking. Dr. Baomi officially kicks off campaign today. Ghana posts to unveil a Santahini commemorative stamp. Yesterday there was a documentary detailing his 25-year reign.
Yes.
Amazing stuff.
25 years. You know, I remember in 99 when he was named. I remember that Kuku Sechiado interview. So we've been sitting here for 25 years.
Congratulations.
All right, the Anchor newspaper says controversial minor Okobin exposed on UTV as he throws accusations after alleged threat on journalist. Minorities caution desist from branding basic school in MPP colors. And the education ministry is also clarifying that changing of uniforms not for all basic schools.
Mm. So NPP is wooing voters in a jostle for Kwabena Boateng. This is the custodian visit to Pope Francis. Ghanaians praise Baomia for religious harmony, and DMB begins nationwide issues-based campaign and uphold ethical standards. This is Jumfo telling journalists, you are speaking at Radio University's 30th anniversary launch at the University of Ghana last week.
Congratulations to that media house.
Amazing stuff done.
BNFT. All right, finally from me, the BNFT says, SNIT assures stakeholders of financial resilience despite concerns over future reserves. Sustainability financing gap threatens countries' SDG targets. That's coming from some experts.
Mm.
And cybercrime expert urges vigilance amidst rising fraud cases.
So the Ghanaian publisher, finally from me, Baomia kicks off 2024 campaign. Nana Jatta, the Sith Lord's creativity of AUCC students. Akufo-Addo Baomia Frimamon Wafakeke and Transport Minister inducted as CISCM Fellow.
Let me take you across the African continent on allafrica.com just to give you a sense of what's happening around us. So in Burkina Faso, the military junta has slammed an NGO report on a massacre. They claim it's baseless, and because of that, they have suspended foreign media houses over the coverage of this Human Rights Watch report. So that's Burkina Faso. In Nigeria, President Bola Tinubu has been speaking at the World Economic Forum, and he's defending the fuel subsidy removal as well as the foreign exchange reforms as necessary to keep Nigeria's economy running. So that's President Bola Tinubu. Meanwhile, still in Nigeria, there are queues in Abuja for fuel as petrol dries up in that country. I'm telling you. Now, in Kenya, Kenyans have been urged to stay off the roads and vacate homes as flooding worsens.
Wow.
Now, this is what they call two troubles, one God. There's also a doctor's strike crippling healthcare. So if you're in Kenya this morning hosting a morning show,
you're
probably
about
talking about doctors not working and
flooding,
keeping the whole country in and underwater, or parts of the country. Then, still in the West Africa sub-region, U.S. troops to make temporary withdrawal from Chad. That's an important security story for West Africa. Also, West Africa marks World Malaria Day with life-saving vaccines. We'll talk about vaccines as well. We understand there's a resurge of COVID-19. Now, I'll give you two quick headlines on citynewsroom.com before we come into other stories. Guta says power outages are affecting our businesses.
Yes.
Release Dumso timetable.
At once by force.
Release Dumso timetable.
Immediate and immediately.
I'm telling you. Now, there's also a standoff between EC and Imani. You've heard that story.
Yeah.
Who were auctioneers of the 10 BVDs. EC statement on obsolete BVDs, lies, half-truths, and pure fantasies. Imani is not happy at all with the Electoral Commission. I'll take you to a few more websites. If you go to GNA, they're talking about SNIT's response to the story about funds. There are enough funds to pay benefits due members. This is SNIT's response to that ILO report. We'll delve into that in the course of the week. MyJoyOnline.com. Guta charges ECG. Provide Dumso timetable for businesses to plan.
Yes.
They're also saying, what are the real causes of the erratic power outages? Guta is not happy this morning. Meanwhile, Mahama is speaking to Akufo-Addo directly. God makes rulers, not you. You can't choose your successor. Mahama to Akufo-Addo. Star FM lead story, same thing. You can never choose your successor. Akufo-Addo is being told by Mahama. Meanwhile, Akufo-Addo says, no umbrella butterfly influence independent candidate will succeed in Ejiso. He is politicking in that country. And then a few more stories. If you go to Class FM, SNIT dismisses gloomy ILO prediction. Pensions funded by contributions, investment returns, not reserves. They say. Meanwhile, Guta stories here as well. Dumso forcing traders to keep petrol generators in shops. It's dangerous for our businesses. This is Dr. Joseph Obeng. Let's get into the details of the stories, gentlemen.
Okay, let me start with the Ghanaian Times, Bernard. They are raising an alert.
Mm-hmm.
So, flood alert. The stream at Wager in the Wager Gbawe municipality, which serves as spillway for excess water from the Wager treatment plant into the sea, is heavily choked with weeds impeding the flow of water along the canal.
All right.
The downstream communities of Tetegu, New Wager, Sampa Valley, and Oblogo, among other surrounding areas, experience perennial flooding with its concomitant loss of lives and properties each time the Ghana Water Company has to spill excess water to save the treatment plant from collapse during heavy rain. So essentially, Ghanaian Times is raising alert and demanding that the heavily choked stream with weeds should be
because
cleared
once
quickly.
The rains come, all the communities around and downstream
will be affected.
Very good story, very good alert. Let nobody accuse the media of sleeping on flooding job when the flooding starts. As I speak to you, Kenya is going through flooding, unprecedented levels of flooding. But let's come to the Daily Guide. Education is the big story.
Well, the Daily Guide on page 3, MMDC's hail education transformation. Now, the story says that the transformation of the education sector with emphasis on equipping students with tech skills and making them comfortable in intercultural and global communication has earned the plaudits of MMDCEs. According to them, the introduction of 21st century education is giving students the skills they need to succeed in this new world. Now, they were speaking at a meeting with Dr. Yawe Duchum, the education minister in Kumasi, last Friday, and the development agents expressed their belief that Ghana's education was on the path to improvement, citing the level of investment in the sector since 2017.
He's been busy this past week. Almost every day he's had a program, and this was the last of those programs. That story is in other papers as well.
Yes, but the controversial twist is the colors and paintings.
So, if you can give us the headlines.
Akufo-Addo is not changing school uniforms to blue and white. Education ministry clarifies. The Ministry of Education says it is not true that government has plans to change the colors of the uniforms for basic school students across the country, and also to repaint all public basic schools into blue and white. Talks on whether or not school uniforms at the basic school level would be changed by government became topical issue after Education Minister Dr. Yawase Aduchum touched on the subject at a recent public event. He was categorical in his statement. You see, you don't see brown and yellow. We are rebranding public schools. Now, brown and yellow, blue and white, and no brown and yellow, blue and white, and we are changing the uniforms too. This is President Akufo-Addo and Vice President Mahmoud Bawumia's Ghana.
So what we saw after that statement was a statement released by the Education Ministry's PRO, now seeking to clarify that this would apply only to model schools and not to
schools
all schools.
That are now
because the way he said it,
it
was easy to believe that they were doing it for
going
all,
to
schools.
Rebrand all schools.
Now, let's stay with a couple of stories. MPP MP tells Akufo-Addo to be transparent. This is the SML report. Now, this SML report was the subject of discussion throughout the weekend. Now, Tough Talking Kwame and the Apia Akubi, presenting Asante Akim North, has joined the chorus of voices demanding publication of the KGMG audit report concerning the agreement between the GRA and SML, which is being labeled as a retirement benefit for the president and his family. This call for transparency gained significance as Bryce Simmons, vice president of Imani, and Daniel Aldemelovu, former attorney general, former auditor general, intensified the criticism of the contentious contract. While Bryce Simmons draws parallels between this contract and the controversial Japa deal, Domelevo questions the legality and professionalism of appointing KPMG for the audit. Now, Api Akubi, MPP MP, stressed the importance of making the report public for informed discussions, emphasizing that someone doesn't need to request its release, as reports are meant to be accessible to interested parties. And so, basically, the newspaper, the Herald, summarizes stories on the big issue, mm-hmm. news file, and key points on TV3, right. with various views being expressed. So, for right. example, they quote Isaac Adongo, ranking member of the Finance Committee, who urged the president to provide full details of the report, mm-hmm. and other people who spoke on various programs, like Manasseh Azuri Awuni, mm. who on City News is captured as also saying that we must investigate and jail persons liable for GRA SML contract. He was speaking on the big issue this weekend, mm-hmm. and he says that basically that's what I've said. So those are the stories from that.
If you go to page 4 of the Inquisitor newspaper, it says sabotage among road contractors.
Hey.
Now, a dangerous trend of first-class Ghanaian road contractors sabotaging one another, hey. All in the name of winning juicy government contracts, is the newest order among them. Hello. The Inquisitor has been told of how some contractors could go to the corridors of power to gossip about which political parties other contractors support
after
making money from works awarded to them by the government.
Mm.
There is no one voice among the contractors on how to deal with government on issues bothering on their payments. Rather, most of them have resorted to running to the allies in government for favors on their payments. Now, although Yoko has cleared the Ministry of Roads and Highways and contractors on allegations made by Professor Stephen Adai, mm-hmm. that contractors pay bribes before getting contracts, sources within the contractor groups point to how monies are shared in order to get a contract or get payments.
Well, that's an interesting one. Let's come back to you,
Bernard. If I take you to the Finder story of interest, Radio Universe commemorates 30th anniversary, plans to go commercial. So Radio Universe, the University of Ghana campus-based radio station, has celebrated its 30 years of broadcast, radio broadcast on UG campus and in the country as a whole. The radio station was established in 1994 during the early years of Ghana's return to constitutional rule and has served the campus. So Dr. Abubakar Siddiq Ahmed, Radio University Station Manager, said it had over the years been a campus community-based and socially responsible radio that empowered, educated, and entertained. Now he says the focus is going to be semi-commercial. So they are going to introduce semi-commercial.
And while we congratulate Radio Universe for the great work they've done and all the people they produce, there's a troubling story about an attack on Class Media Group. This is Herald page 2. Giba waits into petrol bomb attack on Class Media Group. We must be very worried about this. Now, the president of the Ghana Independent Broadcast Association, Giba, has described as shocking the recent petrol bomb attack on Class Media Group's Laboni headquarters in Accra by arsonists around 2 a.m. on Thursday, 25th April. The media company CCTV cameras captured 4 men on motorbikes fleeing the scene after hurling the fiery balls into the compound, shattering the glass barrier and door of the reception. The motive behind the attacks are not clear, but CMG has reported the incident to the police for investigations. Speaking to Kwame Jumwa Jeman on Class FM's morning show on Friday, Cecil Thomas Sunkwa Mills, president of Giba, said Giba discussed the incident late Thursday night, and it brings about the concern of security for radio and TV stations, especially at this time of the year, and we believe that we should let the police see what exactly happened, because what happens to one could happen to another. And I mean, if you've seen, the City News did a report on this, you see the CCTV camera footage, it's quite serious. They threw the thing into the compound at night, hoping the whole place would be burnt up. You know, luckily the CCTV camera captured it, but you wouldn't see the real people. Even though they seemed to be people on motorbikes, you wouldn't really see their faces. And this was captured at 2:24 a.m. In the dead of the night. Now, the bombs shattered CMG's newly installed glass doors and barrier at the reception area. The police say they are investigating, but no arrests have been made so far.
It's not good. Bernard, there are several stories on Dr. Baumia kicking off his campaign today. Mm-hmm. This one captures it well. It says, starting a national campaign tour in Dumso when transportation fares have gone up by 20%. The new publisher certainly would not want to be in the shoes of Vice President Mahmoud Baumia, flag bearer of the new Patriotic Party, as he starts his national campaign tour today to tell Ghanaians why he's the best person to fix Ghana's problems and therefore for should be voted for as the next president. We wish he fixed the problems now. Mm-hmm. The last paragraph says, we call on him to fix it now to prove who he says he is. So which
is
footballer?
Is it an editorial?
It's an opinion. Yeah,
okay. Because the story itself says the man is going to campaign.
Yeah, he's going to campaign.
So the editorial has jumped on
they
the story.
They are giving you the issues
to tell him what they want
exactly.
to ask to say. Okay.
Yes, that's like it's a question. Which footballer ever says I would not score goals during training sessions or friendly matches, but would score goals only if and when he is made captain, when he's made to captain the team during competitive matches? So they raise the issues there. Mm-hmm. Poor quality roads, Dumso, and the fact that the timetable is not out. They also raise the issue of transport fares going up by 20%, mm-hmm. and they are challenging Dr. Baumia to fix the issues now.
I tell you. Yeah. Now, the EC and Imani yep. are clashing. Yeah. The Republic Press has that story.
Yes, the EC has issued a response to allegations made by Mr. Bright Simmons, Vice President of Imani Center for Policy and Education regarding the expenditure of $150 million on biometric verification devices in 2020. This rebuttal was outlined in a statement signed by Mr. Fred Tete, Deputy Director of Research, Monitoring and Evaluation. Now, Imani Ghana, a Ghanaian policy think tank, has strongly contested the EC's recent statement concerning the discovery of 10 outdated BVDs at a recycling company in Medina. The EC had clarified that these devices were lawfully auctioned and had been acquired before the 2012 elections. However, Imani Africa has dismissed the EC's explanations as, quote, lies, half-truths, and pure fantasies, end quote. So,
yeah, they are talking about how EC can reconcile the claim of just 10 devices being auctioned with the thousands of identical devices captured in the photographic evidence shared by Bright Simmons. Then they also they issue a statement on the matter. So basically they're saying that through their painstaking checks that the recycling companies engaged for the exercise do not have the strict certification for secure data destruction that is required when disposing of sensitive equipment like BVDs. Mm-hmm. This matter will continue to have our attention.
But ECG is recouping 598,666 CDs from 74 illegal connections. Yeah. This is the Electricity Company of Ghana, Ashanti West Region. It has uncovered 74 illegal connections during the first quarter of 2024. The illegal connections discovered during day and night monitoring exercise saw revenue protection team visit hotels, households, hostels, coach stores, restaurants, and some institutions to fish out customers who had connected to the national grid illegally and using power for free. And so the amount they have recouped is 598, almost 600,000 Ghana CDs.
Guta is not happy with ECG. Yeah. There are a number of stories on various websites, including City and Class.
True.
The City version is basically asking for a Dumso timetable.
Sharp.
Guta president says Dumso is affecting their productivity. In a statement, they highlighted the significant impact of the power outages on various sectors, including agriculture, trade, and industry. According to them, manufacturers are struggling to maintain production schedules and plan for their workforce due to the inconsistent power supply, which also increases production costs and worsens living conditions. Traders, shop owners, wholesalers, tailors, dressmakers, electricians, and other artisans are also facing setbacks in their business due to the Dumso phenomenon. Then they speak in a different website that the current erratic power supply is forcing traders to keep generators and fuel at their shops, a situation that portends danger for avenues and areas where people converge for commerce. The Guta has warned. This is not only against the safety and security of our market, but also a dangerous practice as necessitated by the Dumso phenomenon, which needs to be fixed expeditiously. A statement signed by Guta Director of Communication Joseph Paddy said, among others.
So now, as they are keeping the generators in their stops, in their shows and all, with the fuel and everything, fuel in the event of any fire outbreak, anything it could be deadly.
Just quickly before we leave, page 3 of the BNFT, SNIT is speaking.
Yes.
And they are telling people not to worry over its long-term financial viability. Now, this is in response to claims that the pension funds reserves could be depleted by 2026. Now, they are responding to details from an ILO report, and the statement follows recent polls circulating on news portals suggesting an inability to pay benefits beyond 2036 due to reserve depletion based on an actuarial valuation by the ILO as of December 31, 2020.
Thank you very much, Nathan. Thank you very much, Caleb. That's all we have time for on the newspaper review. Coming up next is the City Business News. Stay with us.
This is the City Breakfast Show, the city's biggest conversation.
It's fast approaching 7 o'clock. City Business News is next, brought to you by Access Bank. You can now send money to pay for goods and services, make business transactions, and cover your school fees across the continent without worrying about foreign exchange losses or delays. It's straightforward, secure, and keeps your mind at ease. It's the PAPS that we're working with, Access Bank. You can send money to Nigeria, Liberia, Gambia, Guinea, Sierra Leone with zero foreign exchange hassle. Call 0800-004400 or visit our website, ghana.accessbankplc.com. We're also sponsored by Goyle. Look for our Goyle Auto gas stations at Bema Camp in Accra, at Peshi in Accra, in Pedu in Cape Coast, Kenton Crown in Kumasi, and Pintin at Takrady. We're delivering the safest and most affordable gas at your convenience. Neil Atilati is joining us with the City Business News. Good morning.
Good morning, Bernard. Hello to you out there. Welcome to the breakfast edition of City Business News, proudly brought to you by MTN, Goyle, and Access Bank. Coming up, hoteliers demand financial support from government over erratic power supply to avert the collapse of the hospitality sector. Plus, World Bank warned central banks against policy rate cuts as underlining geopolitical issues are expected to slow down economic growth. It's Monday morning. Thank you for joining us. I am Nila Tilati. Details of our stories now. As businesses and Ghanaians reel under the impact of the current intermittent power outages, stakeholders in the hospitality sector have added their voices to calls for a load shedding timetable. They note that the adverse impact of the power crisis has compelled them to spend more on alternative power sources. City Business News puts the spotlight on some hotels in the capital city to find out how they are coping with the power outages as part of our series on the impact of the erratic power supply. Here's more.
For some months now, the country has been grappling with frequent power outages, prompting calls from Ghanaians for a timetable to manage these disruptions. ECG has repeatedly stated that there is no need for a timetable as it is taking proactive steps to resolve the ongoing intermittent power outages. But as the days go by, many businesses in different sectors of the economy are reeling from the negative impact of this situation on the operations. The hospitality industry is one of such, and some stakeholders have been speaking to the Business News.
Planning becomes a problem because of the intermittent outages. You don't know when it's going to go off, when it's going to come on. But then, even though we have backup supply, that is generators, sometimes they may even fail because it's mechanical. So if you know how it is, we should be able to plan very well. However, the most challenging aspect is the finance aspect in terms of cost of production. Maintaining a generator is more expensive than using ECG.
The main thing is the unpredictability of when you lose power. So that really makes it difficult because we have so many gadgets.
Despite implementing alternative solutions, how much is this costing these hotels?
When the power goes off, we end up spending about 8,000 in getting fuel to power the gen sets. Okay, so this is an unplanned situation. I mean, the power goes off anytime, unannounced and all that. So wherever the situation is, you have to try and find a way to get money to get a fuel into your gen set in order to run, keep the business running.
They, however, note that they might be pushed to transfer the costs to the consumer if the issue is not addressed.
Despite government's insistence that there is no need for the provision of a timetable, these stakeholders have this to say.
As a basic management principle, if there are difficulties, it's helpful to let everybody know what the difficulties are, and then we can prepare towards it.
If they are able to give us a timetable, it will help in terms of planning.
Those were some stakeholders in the hospitality sector bemoaning the impact of the current intermittent power outages on their operations. To end that report put together by City Business News' Netili Neti Ajaho. Meantime, the Ghana Union of Traders Association, GUTA, is also mounting pressure on the government for a load shedding timetable. Joseph Paddy is Director of Communications for GUTA.
In the early stage, we heard that there has been some repairs work has been going on.
And for how long can this repairs work go on? Okay, fine. If repairs work is going on, for how long can it go on? Let us know. Where are you doing those repairs? And what time, what are the timeline you'll be finishing with those repairs? Then we can plan. But we waited for all this while, and still we're still going through this challenge. What prompted this? What occasioned this? And to what timeline should we be waiting for? And I believe for as long as we wait, people's businesses are collapsing. People are losing capital. People are losing money. So our patience is running out. That is why we have come out that as early as possible, as quickly as possible, government or the ECG must come out with a timetable so we can plan. The request is not even today. We were requesting as far back as yesterday that it should be there and then.
Joseph Paddy is Director of Communication for the Ghana Union of Traders Association, GUTA. Now, central banks intending to implement interest rate reduction may have to halt this move. This caution by the World Bank stems from the upward pressure on commodity prices, particularly oil and gold, due to the conflict in Middle East. Despite a global decline in headline inflation last year, disinflation has slowed, with core inflation remaining high in many advanced economies and emerging markets and developing economies such as Ghana. The World Bank's April 2024 Commodity Outlook Report projects Brent oil prices to average $84 per barrel in 2024, a slight increase from 2023 before decreasing to $79 per barrel in 2025. Additionally, gold prices are expected to rise by 8% in 2024 to an average of $2,100 per troy ounce, with moderation expected in 2025. Although the World Bank forecast a 3% decrease in commodity prices for 2024, it warns of several downside risks that could disrupt the anticipated slow but steady economic growth. The Chamber of Petroleum Consumers Ghana, COPEC, is projecting petrol prices to rise in the first pricing window of May while diesel prices at the pumps decline. However, with a varied range of fuel prices projected for the upcoming pricing window, COPEC is anticipating oil marketing companies to maintain their existing prices and not exceed 15 Ghana cedis per litre on petroleum products. Executive Secretary of COPEC is Duncan Amo, and he has been speaking to City Business News.
For the first window in May, the outlook suggests petrol prices could go up between 2 and 3%. Diesel could decline between the same 2 and 3%. LPG could decline by some 3 to 4%. However, as is with most of the oil marketing companies, when such windows happen, they do what they call cross pricing. And so instead of going up on the price of petrol and declining on the price of diesel, they stay prices for both products. And so what we are quite certain is that prices could be stable for and during the first window in May. LPG prices, however, are likely to go down at the pumps.
Duncan Amoa is Executive Secretary of the Chamber of Petroleum Consumers Ghana, COPEC. Still on energy, because energy analyst Dr. Yusif Suleimana is calling for proactive and an all-inclusive measure to strengthen the gold for oil policy. According to him, the current framework of the policy falls short of its intended purpose to prevent currency devaluation. His call comes on the back of government's proposal to designate Bulk Energy Storage and Transportation Company as the sole off-taker for Sintu Oil Refinery Limited's production under the Gold for Oil policy, and the objections it has sparked from industry players, including the Chamber of Bulk Oil Distributors. While he acknowledges that a revision of the policies needed, Dr. Yusif Suleiman emphasizes the importance of stakeholder engagement in the decision-making process.
Gold for Oil has become powerless in its ability to do what it was set up to do, to prevent the currency to stem the tide on the currency weakness. It couldn't do that. And with its current framework, it's not able to do that. It will never be able to do that until we get a tweak. So why I don't go against the current intervention is the fact that Go for Oil indeed needs a tweak. I've called for them to either put it on hold or try to make a serious kind of tweak on the whole policy in general, because the policy as it is now, in its current form, it cannot have is highly limited in its ability to be able to stem the tide with respect to what is happening.
Dr. Yusuf Suleimana is an energy analyst. Let me now take you to the interbank foreign exchange market, where banks are trading amongst themselves. The dollar gained 3 pesos and is selling at 13 cedis 21 pesos. The British pound is selling at 16 cedis 46 pesos. It lost a peso. The euro is selling at 14 cedis 11 pesos after losing 2 pesos. However, if you go to the Forex Bureau near you in the capital, the dollar is selling at 13 cedis 55 pesos, while the British pound could be sold to you at 16 cedis 60 pesos. That of the euro going for 14 cedis 40 pesos. And that's it for the breakfast edition of City Business News, proudly brought to you by MTN Gold and Access Bank. Our top story this morning: hoteliers demand financial support from government over erratic power supply to avert the collapse of the hospitality sector. Plus, World Bank warned central banks against policy rate cuts as underlying geopolitical issues are expected to slow down economic growth. Join us at 1 p.m. for the afternoon's edition of City Business News, and later at 8:50 p.m. on City TV for CNN Business. But for now, you can visit citynewsroom.com/business for more on our top stories. My name is Ni Lati Lati. Many thanks indeed for listening, and do have a good business day.
Join the conversation on the City Breakfast Show on Facebook at facebook.com/city97.3, Twitter at twitter.com/city973, and Instagram at instagram.com/city973 with the hashtag CityCBS.
This is the City Breakfast Show, the city's biggest conversation.
Minutes past seven. Oh my goodness.
No, I know you do me bad.
So much to do on the show this morning. 9 o'clock is EdTech Monday.
You know,
a big conversation. Nathan Kwa will be hosting in partnership with Meltwater,
my pillow,
and the Mastercard Foundation. We also have an interview with the US ambassador on a big conference coming up starting today. Kickoff is next, though, brought to you by Lesheho. If you're ready to power up your finances, then let the Lesheho fixed deposit solution be your option. With us, you're not just investing, you're making your money work harder for you. So watch your wealth grow. Join the investment revolution with our fixed deposit solution. Take charge of your financial future. Call 0270-040799. Or send a WhatsApp to 0270-040733. The Shareholder, let's improve life. Segment is also brought to you by Zonda Ghana Limited, your one-stop shop for quality trucks like Shantui bulldozers, excavators, graders, payloaders, rollers, power pickups, and more. Zonda creates opportunities to empower people. We have top-notch after-sales support. Visit us off the Temaplau Road, close to Free Zones and Cliff. 0501-773-333. Zonda, built in Ghana, building Ghana. And of course, Shell Fuels, designed with Dynaflex technology, are most advanced to prevent deposit buildup and keep your engine clean and protected. They are designed to help save fuel and get extra kilometers from each tank fill, so you can do more in your day. So drive into a Shell station today and fuel up your car with Shell Fuels, designed for engine efficiency and performance. So Bernard 1 and Bernard 2 are in the studio. One is B-E-R-N, the other is B-E-N-N.
Yes, my boss.
And as they say, Paul, I want Bantam. Charlie. They say, who person OG? Bernard.
What's Bachelor Debbie?
Over the weekend, when you are hosting the, just a catches song. It's like, that's my name. It's Bernard Beku, and as now I'm scoring Tottenham Hotspur, and today we have a game for you. We want to score. Tell it,
boss.
Over steady, oh.
Was much of my skin.
The way you didn't mention your name, you are rendering me irrelevant to the public.
No,
because now when you say you're Bernard, people like that one pass my own. You have to be very careful.
Boss, I'm careful.
I'm giving you last warning. The next time it will be a memo. So play the jingle. Let me listen to how you introduce yourself today.
Drills one in. That's a good ball in. Romero couldn't get enough on it. Another player goes down. VAR are looking at this. There is a boot against the leg, isn't there, from Declan Rice. Yeah, it's a penalty. Son against Raya. It's a good penalty. Son has scored. Tottenham 2, Arsenal 3.
Now, Premier League leaders Arsenal survived the second half scare at Tottenham to hold on for a 3-2 North London derby victory that cemented their place at the top. We've got a review of the matches from the weekend coming up, and we take you to Kumasi for this in the CAF Confederations Cup.
It's Jaziri, and it's broken kindly here. It's a wrong goal, and it's the third, and surely that's job done. Mustafa Chalabi has put Zamalek surely beyond doubt into the final of the Confederation Cup.
Now, the fairy tale run by Dreams FC has come to an end in the CAF Confederations Cup after crumbling to Zamalek in Kumasi. There is more for you, plus some tennis news and other updates with me, Bernard Abeku-Autry. I will start with some athletics this morning, and Ghana came second in the 4x100 meters relay race behind Jamaica in a time of 39.71 seconds at the Penn Relays in Philadelphia. Ole Joseph Paul Amoah from the team that picked up the silver medal from the African Games was there to compete, with Benjamin Azamati playing no part in the competition. The team that represented Ghana were Ibrahim Fuseini, Barnabas Ageh, Joseph Odro Menu, and Joseph Paul Amoah. The next relay competition is in May in Bahamas, with Team Ghana hoping to finish in a better time and clinch a place at the Paris Games. To some football news now, all the way in Russia, in Ghana's Black Starlets dominated Kazakhstan with a resounding 5-1 victory in their third group match at the UEFA Under-16 Development Tournament held in Russia. The impressive win notches Ghana's second consecutive triumph in the tournament, mirroring their earlier success against Serbia with the same scoreline. To the CAF Confederations Cup now, and Dreams FC bowed out of the competition yesterday following their defeat to Zamalek at the Babara Sports Stadium in Kumasi. The Still Believe lads suffered a 3-0 loss in the second leg of their semi-final tie. The result in Kumasi, after a goalless draw in Cairo, spells the end of the road for the Ghanaian side in the competition. Head coach Abdul Karim Zito says he will pick a lot of positives despite crashing out in the semis.
A lot. Yes, we couldn't make it to the finals, but I have not regretted where I've reached. Nobody gave it a dog chance that we can even reach to this stage. So I'm proud of my boys. I'm proud of myself. We go back and we come back again. We came into this game with positive attitude to qualify, because it's like when the goal started coming, my boy's morale came down. So at the dressing room, I have to talk more than the normal talking I've been doing all the time. Went into my psychological knowledge in the game just to psych them up, to tell them that, yes, we've been given two goals, but it's not the end. Let's go back and then fight. So you can easily see that they lost focus. And then we should have won the game the first half, to be honest with you. We had about 4 chances to 2. And then because we couldn't stay focused, we couldn't get the opportunity. Actually, if it were to be 2-1 or 2-2, we would have been better this half than what has happened. So I take it to be an experience, and they've also experienced it, because we've met a very experienced team.
Abdul Karim Zito is the head coach of Dreams FC. Some fans have been reacting to the exploits of the Ghanaian side in a CAF Confederations Cup. Let's hear from them.
I think this is a very good experience for Dreams FC. Nobody thought that Dreams FC is going to get to this level. They tried, they did their best. They could only hold up their heads in high and make sure that they remain in the competition consistently to grow their confidence and make sure that some other time to come, they will get a good luck on their side and they will win their games and win the competition.
It was a fair result to me, because Dreams, they had opportunities to score, but it's like, I should say they weren't fortunate. They couldn't utilize their chances, but Zamalek made good use of their chances, and I think inexperience also counted, but at least they did well.
First of all, Dreams FC raised expectations. They went away, they played a goalless draw. They were even singing in the dressing room, so we knew obviously when we were coming here that Dreams FC will not disappoint. But this is way more shambolic than we expected, you know.
Away from the Babayaro Sports Stadium, let's talk about the Ghana Premier League. Now, media men Kotoko battled to a 1-1 draw at the Akon Park. Steven Mukwala puts Kotoko ahead in the 22nd minute, but DAWC Taylor's penalty in the 57th minute and media my share of the point. Kotoko's Prosper Nateogum felt frustrated with his team's inability to convert numerous scoring opportunities despite their dominance against the Mauve and Yellows.
Yeah, it's true. They are right. And it's been happening throughout the season. We create a lot of chances, but then the conversion is the issue. Interestingly, too, we've been training on it. At training, they score a lot of goals at training. But then the tempo and the temperament of training and games are different. They need to be positionally aware of where they are, apply the right technique, and put the ball at the back of the net. If you look at the goal, for instance, Steven scored. The jump was super, the header, the forehead, everything was okay. So they are right. I think we still need to work on it and make sure that the few chances that come our way, we will be able to convert.
Dr. Prosper Nateogum is the head coach for Kumasi Asante Kotoko. Elsewhere at the Dr. Kwame Chase Sports Complex in Abrankasi, Nations FC and BBN Eagles stars also settled for a goalless draw in Bechem. Bechem United and Heart of Lions played out a 1-1 draw at the Nanafo Suji Abua Park. Adriana FC suffered a 2-1 defeat against Karela United at the Nana Ajimanbedu Park in Doma. In the final match of the day, FC Samatex continued their impressive form with a 1-0 victory over Great Olympics at the Incentive Sports Complex. Later today, Roman FC will host Bofakotano at the Nana Professor Konamansa the Second Park at 3 p.m. We head to the English Premier League now. We start off at the City ground and Erling Haaland marked his return with the goal as Manchester City kept up the pressure on leaders Arsenal with a 2-0 victory over Nottingham Forest. Pep Guardiola's City have a game in hand over Arsenal but may still need to win all of their games between now and the end of the season to secure a record fourth consecutive Premier League title. What does the City boss think on the rest of the Premier League?
If you are a quality performance, that means we are who we are. We are closer to win the games. So today was the coin. The game was in danger. But of course, during 38 games and the amount of games that we have, I knew the game would be like that. But they respond well. And in that moment, of course, the win is the most important thing. But not now. In September, October, November, December, and every game we play, the most important thing is the result. For us, because we live better. And because all of you judge results, not performance. But today the performance was not really good.
You heard from Pep Guardiola, the Manchester City boss. At the Tottenham Hotspurs in a North London derby, Arsenal overcame the hurdle of a North London derby and an anxious finale to maintain momentum in a Premier League title pursuit with a vital 3-2 victory at Tottenham. Spurs now remain in fifth place in the Premier League, 7 points behind Aston Villa with 2 games in hand. For Arsenal, still top of the table, we hear from Bukayo Saka, who registered his 15th goal of the season in a Premier League.
Yeah, that last 20 minutes wasn't nice, but it was worth it, man. Yeah, worth it.
You came in, you said it was horrible. Just tell us how the feeling changes when it goes from 3-1 and then obviously 3-2.
Yeah, obviously we know it's a big derby and they don't want to just lose 3-0 at home. So once they got one, you know, the crowd was up, they was up and the momentum shifted their way. But, you know, I'm proud of all the boys. We fought to the end and, yeah, we got the 3 points.
So what's key? What's really important when it gets like that? You've been comfortable, it gets tight. What do you need to do?
Well, we just need to be calm, you know. Obviously, everything's quite frantic. And I know it's
like the swan? on the surface, calm. Underneath, you're panicking furiously.
A bit, but yeah, I think we showed our level heads at the end. And yeah, I'm proud of everyone to get the win.
Bukayo Saka,
is the Arsenal star. At the North London Stadium, Liverpool's Premier League title hopes seem all but over after Mikel Antonio scored to rescue a point for West Ham United. Mohamed Kudus grabbed an assist in that game at a Villa Park. Chelsea played out a 2-2 draw with Aston Villa, leading to Chelsea's manager Mauricio Pochettino saying video technology is damaging English football after Alex De Sarsi had a stoppage time winner disallowed. We head to France now, and Paris Saint-Germain won their third consecutive Ligue 1 title after second place Monaco fell to a 3-2 defeat against Lyon. Paris Saint-Germain are 12 points clear and cannot be caught with just three games remaining. It is PSG's 12th Ligue 1 title and their 10th in the past 11 years. Wrapping up with some tennis, and defending champion Carlos Alcaraz reached the last 16 of the Madrid Open as he cruised past Thiago Sibot Wild. Well, world number 3 won 6-3, 6-3 against Brazil Sibot Wild, and the win continues second seed Alcaraz's dominance at the event, which he won in 2022 and 2023. That's your sports on Kickoff. Kickoff is proudly brought to you by Shell, Lechejo and Zonda. For more sports stories, kindly head to citysportonline.com. I am Bernard Abeku-Audrey. Sports is life. Get involved.
Join the conversation on the City Breakfast Show on Facebook at facebook.com/city973, Twitter at twitter.com/city973, and Instagram at instagram.com/city973 with the hashtag CityCBS.
City Breakfast Show. So much to do on the show this morning. Later in the morning, I'll be speaking to Ambassador Robert Scott, Deputy Commander for Civil Military Engagement, U.S. Africa Command. And there's a big conference happening in this country. It's called the Africa Maritime Forces Summit Naval Infantry Leaders Symposium. That later in the morning. We also have EdTech Monday this morning. And what topic are we discussing?
Yes, we are talking about EdTech and gamification, enhancing student engagement using interactive learning solutions.
That's at 9 o'clock. Yeah. But before all of that, which body in Ghana is responsible for solving traffic? I think we should set up a national traffic authority. I tell you, we need to set up a national traffic authority. What I experienced this weekend was just unbelievable. Nobody has the road ministry, the transport ministry, the railway ministry, or the police, MTTD, or whatever. You know, there are some national security threats which have to be properly identified. I think traffic is a national security threat. Before I get into that, happy birthday to Mrs. Dora Owusu and Leslie Tekuo Akwe. Happy 10th birthday to Gifting Kunim Nanekua Kofi, coming in from Esaba, Mark Dromo and Enumunyam. To you, Nkunim Na Aku Kofi. And to Mariam Boating of the Growth Office Department, Leslie Mark Hansen of the Audit and Assurance Department, and Kapsvi Ata Opuni, Financial Advisory Department, all of Deloitte, from the Country Manager of Country Managing Partner of Deloitte, Daniel Kojo Usu, and all the staff of Deloitte. So whilst a lot of people have been complaining about Doomsaw and its concomitant problems, I was asking myself what it would take to put, I mean, like you drive through. I mean, there's something wrong with Ghana. I don't get you. Caleb, listen to this.
Yes,
we've gotten to Mataheko.
Yeah.
And there's traffic to Michelle Camp.
Yeah.
To Afarewa.
Yeah.
So we decide that, following Google's advice, we'll do a U-turn and go and pass through MF's estate, and come and join the Kwon Road. Beautiful houses, beautiful schools, terrible roads. You know, and I am thinking to myself, can't we just decide one day that every brown patch in Ghana will be properly tarred? Whether we use concrete for some, asphalt overlay for some, normal stones or rock.
Yeah.
You know, why on earth should we be driving on dusty roads in 2024? Second question I asked. So I got on the motorway.
Yeah.
So I got on the motorway like 7:20 in the evening. After I got to... So this is my timeline. I got to the bread place.
Okay.
They sell
hot
some...
Hot oven.
Hot oven.
I got there probably nice place. Five... Before 6:00.
Wow.
We do lungu lungu and appear on the motorway after like 1 hour. And then people who are going to... So you're on the motorway coming to Accra, right? If you live at from Klagon on your left,
yeah,
to Spintex itself, to yeah, Spintex to parts of Nungwa Teshin,
yeah,
technically you have to drive all the way to either pass through Tema Harbor,
yeah,
and go and use the beach road, or you have to get to Shiashi and come back. So if you don't want to do that, you go off the road and use the tunnel.
Yeah.
I mean, for me, look, you have three tunnels. The people call it underbridge.
Yeah.
All right. So there's one at Klagon. There's one at 18 Junction or 18. And then there's one East Legon. The East Legon one, luckily, Top has been one. Redone.
Correct.
In 2018.
Yeah.
Kudos. The one at the one that takes you to Community 18.
It's still for cattle crossing.
Caleb, I don't even think a Kia truck,
yeah,
of a certain height can go through that thing.
Yeah.
You know, and we built the motorway in the 60s. Yeah. The guy who built the motorway thought about cows and realized that because those areas were all cattle rearing areas, yeah, the cows need to cross. So he had the sense to do
a tunnel.
60 years later,
where human beings
who allegedly have more education have gone to higher university,
yes,
who drive cars, because you know this, most of them were even walking.
Yes.
Now drive cars through the cow tunnel.
Charlie.
In most motorways in the world, yeah, after every 4 or 5 kilometers, you bear right.
Yeah.
Then you pass through a tunnel and drive to the community.
Go to the other way.
So people see a motorway is not designed to be driven just from Tema to Accra without going off it. They bear out and then they, so that's the basic,
yeah,
design.
Yeah.
And it's taken us 60 years. We still have two cattle tunnels. That evening at 7:30, when I got to that place, I could count over 70 cars.
Yeah.
Waiting, some were coming. So there are two entry points.
Yeah.
So it's like one going and turn right, one coming down. And then on the left side too, they were so, what is this?
And you always must wait for the others to finish coming. And then you also.
And you know the other point. So this is the thing about Ghana that makes me think we are not serious. There's no proper lighting there.
Yeah.
So if on a bad day,
yeah,
a group of robbers come with guns, they can rob 20 people.
They'll have a field day.
Because you have people just, there's no light, the place is dark. The road itself that leads to the tunnel is bad. The tunnel itself, there's no proper light inside. And I'm saying to myself, then the motorway, the whole motorway is dark.
Yeah.
I mean, how do you have road safety commission? You have...
Road safety authority.
How do you have a motorway which has no light in the night?
Yeah. The entire stretch.
So what are you enforcing? Like, are you serious as a country? So you have all this trouble, you drive through from Akosombo through 22, all these Kominini Lungus you pass through. And by the way, this road from 22, from the bread place all the, yeah, way to Michelle Camp. Yeah. Do you need to, even if you haven't expanded the road, can't you have like a traffic management plan? You hear me? There's some filling station there. There's some pothole somewhere. It's like, so because you are building the road and you are finishing in 2 years, we should go through this every day. So this is what people go through to work every day.
All the time, I was like, so is this how, no, so I felt that maybe those who live in those areas probably work within those areas. So, because I don't see how after all the torture you go through driving on the motorway, to get home to, you are doing another hour and more in traffic, and then you are getting home and the entire stretch is so bad. I mean, you know, when I have to go to that side of town, I know that the road is bad. I know that the traffic situation is bad. Uh-huh. But having to have gone to an event where I needed to spend time there, and, you know, I needed to catch up, get there in time and all of that, I felt really...
So you were at 25, also
22. I was at 25,
If you check the traffic this morning, which one is worse?
So...
And by the way, listeners, 25... So basically, those who don't understand the geography, if you get to Temamoto where you continue straight, you're going to 25, Dowenya, Pram, and those areas. If you get to Tema and you turn left going to Akosombo, that's 22. Right, I argue that 22 is terrible.
I from the images I've seen online and recollecting from memory, I think yes, 22 is worse.
Although I need to say that on the Pram Pram road there are about 5 abandoned runabouts that worsen the traffic. So there's this attempt to do the road, so you see a runabout, but it's mostly, I don't know how to put it. They've just left it.
They've left it, yeah.
So it makes the traffic worse. And then when you get to the Kpon area, there's this huge pothole, which needlessly causes traffic. And we've been talking about this for like months. Is it like people don't have money to even patch basic potholes?
But that's the problem. So, I mean, if we know that you need a lot of money to do the proper structure, the huge ones, but the one that exists, at least make it usable by periodic maintenance.
How much money would it
periodic
take?
Maintenance?
How much money would it take? There's this portal when you're coming to the Kpon side.
Yeah,
it's just like a gully. Oh. So all the cars, part of the road is like broken into pieces.
All
so
of it. Is
all gone. The cars just slow down, and then you pass the thing, and the road is just smooth.
Oh my God.
So. Is it a Ministry of Roads that doesn't have the money to do pothole patching? Or is it the communities that...
You remember the amounts that was put aside or that was earmarked for pothole patching? Uh-huh. It was, remember, 150 million cedis. And if I remember correctly, when the day we spoke to our friend...
That's Ramediate.
Yes. You know, I think he was saying that... But I think what I took away from that conversation we had was that that amount was not going to be enough to take care of all the potholes. And Ahmed, if you are listening, you can correct me if I'm wrong. But I think it was somebody, I can't say whether it was a contractor. Somebody made the point and said,
you know what made me even more angry?
Was insufficient.
So when I did the U-turn through MFs and did the Lungulungu, there was a place I got to which had like this VRA power plant. They call it VRA road.
Yes.
So that road led me to DPS and Aves. Caleb, that road was like 2 kilometers.
Yeah.
Well done road. Street light from, it was like a runway on an airport.
That's right.
Street light from beginning to end. It was lit with ramps. And I said, so we know how to build roads.
Yeah.
We know how to do. So it's not as if you don't know it.
With road infrastructure, everything intact.
So what would it take to have the motorway lit? Are you saying we don't have money to do it? It's not. I think we don't prioritize people's safety. I think we, the leaders, and we the citizens ourselves, we don't prioritize our own life. Because if you drive on that motorway 19 kilometers every day, and there's no light, and you drive on it 7 days a week, and you don't have anything to say about it.
But the road authorities say anytime they fix the street lights, I mean, people go to steal
police
them.
It. Catch them. People jail
go to
them.
Steal it.
And catch them. Jail them. Catch them. No, it's not an excuse.
It's been a reason they've been given consistently. And it's really
You cannot have a motorway of 19 kilometers, pitch black.
Yeah.
And not expect people to die. It's not just the motorway. Most roads in our country. And I'm saying, we must demand that our leaders make sure every road gets a street light. Every pothole must be patched.
Yes.
Every brown space must be filled. It's possible. It's doable. Just go to Cote d'Ivoire here. Their roads are not as bad as our roads. Do they go to better schools than we do? No. It's the corruption. It's the recklessness. It's the lack of care for citizens. All of that contributes to it.
Yeah.
You cannot tell me that our leaders don't know that it's basic principles that a road like the motorway needs street lights. And you leave it without lights. It's so dark. Everybody's driving with their high beams. You are stressed on the road every day. People are doing road construction, and because of road construction, there's serious traffic. Police MTTD, we don't know where you are. I got to Asutuari Junction. There's traffic. What was the cause of the traffic? some two police are just looking at your face. Hey,
what's up?
I wanted to curse. It's like, we need you 20 kilometers before.
Proper problem.
Help traffic, Mulo. You are standing here looking at my face, and you're basically saying, "Where are you going? What's up?"
Yeah, man.
No, what's up, no, what's up, Ghana. Bro? No, no, what's no. Up, even if the road is bad, I think the police can help ease traffic,
yeah,
because they can understand the flow. What the people in those two areas go through every day doesn't make any sense.
It's not good. And I'm told that the situation is being milked, so that if you get to the end of the Temamoto interchange, there are out riders there. So if you have to go to Adan or Volta region,
oh,
and you want to beat the traffic,
then you them out. They
before you know, they are on the other side. You know, they are leading you straight out of hell. Yeah,
outriders for high.
Yeah,
on that road,
1,000 Ghana city, you are sorted.
Oh, you can't be.
You
serious.
Will jump the traffic. Very highly placed source informed me about this. That, you know, if you get to the end of the road, you look at the traffic, you say, no, you need the Moses. So you see the policeman, outrider,
I want to say something. I remember when Adenta had crashes.
Yeah.
This is like 5 years ago.
The footbridges issue.
They did a protest.
Yeah.
It was a bit rough.
Yeah.
They got the footbridges.
Yeah.
Committee 22, Committee 25.
Yeah.
Motorway users. You guys have honestly to let your leaders know that they have honestly to do something. For me, if you invite me, them young come.
Honestly.
If I know you and you live there, I only call you.
I told them to change the name of their locality to Lomnava, because when I heard the name Dev Traco Courts, I thought, you know. packaging the settings.
If you live in those areas, send me a comment. Which body must be held accountable for traffic in parts of the city? This is Accra Matter. I'm sure those in Takoradi and Kumasi are listening. Send us a WhatsApp 054-998-6996. And seriously, we must demand street lights on every road. Every pothole must be patched. Having cars use tunnels meant for cows. You know, I concluded on my way back that unless we have a certain divine intervention, we'll never catch up. Look, I don't like saying this. You live in the UK, and it's not a good example. But yeah. Caleb, at every material time in London, 1/3 of the city is underground.
Yeah.
That's traffic management. At every material time in the day, 1/3 of the city is underground. They are using the tunnels, the tubes. They call it the tube.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The London Underground.
Yeah.
You can move from all the way Queen's Park in the west to West Ham, Stratford.
Yeah.
Go through, you even see traffic. And this is land, or I mean, this is something they built during the wars. We've had 60 years.
Yeah.
We still use even a motorway. Now, to think about it, the sadness of our condition, a society has managed to build tunnels where 1/3 of the city can go underground.
Yeah.
So basically, the equivalent of from Kasua to Tema, you can go underground.
All of it.
From Adenta to Kaneshi to Kolebu, you can go through tunnel. From Gbechile to East Airport, you can go through tunnel. This is what they've done in their country. Yeah. And this is during the World War. We have had 60 years of the motorway, and we have just one proper tunnel under the motorway. And all our cars with air condition and all the English, we still use a tunnel that cows are supposed to use without proper light.
Yeah. And we queue to use it, because
guys,
one stretch has to flow through before another.
We
will
are
come.
Living, we are that's living incredible. Only 1/100th of the life God promised us, and if we don't get fed up and angry about this and demand for change, how can you be driving on a motorway for 20 kilometers without light, and you go and queue for an hour to use a tunnel meant for cows?
Yeah,
so you are driving a Range Rover.
Yeah.
With light and air condition, with perfume in it,
and
you are driving through a tunnel meant for a cow.
Yeah.
In 21st century Ghana, when in Japan they are on bullet trains, we are behind. We have to wake up and smell the coffee. There's something wrong. There's something wrong, guys. And we've accepted it. That's why it's not changing. Time doesn't change anything. We cannot just sit down and say, well, when are you going to catch up with the UK? When are you going to catch up with Japan? We are not even catching up with Cote d'Ivoire. Then you're talking about Japan.
Yeah.
Like, you are going to Japan in a month. You see what you see there. Like, no, Nathan. It's terrible. It's like, why? Is it that we don't know, we don't deserve good life? And every now and again you hear crash on the road. The road is poorly lit. A truck has parked on the road. They didn't have a proper road signage. You can drive from Accra to Kumasi. You are engaging in what somebody called a macabre dance. Because half of the road is dark.
Yeah.
Irresponsible drivers will leave their cars on the road without a proper lighting. The road is not even properly marked. Yeah, we spend millions of dollars allegedly building roads. Because of corruption and political party issues, everybody is looking on as we do have standard roads, substandard roads. And people are dying every day. We are going through hours of traffic to get to work. We are stressed out. I even want to take the blood pressure of those who live on that side of the road.
It's crazy.
It's just crazy.
It's crazy. Bernard, you mentioned indisciplined driving. And this morning, you see when you get to the Caprice and before you take the end, you take the left to the Boomerang place, right? So usually when you are getting to that end, you'll be on the left if you want to get off the main road.
Yes.
So people will join that, but they want to get to Accra.
And then when,
when the thing turns green, they cross. So someone actually did that and hit my side this morning.
Look at that.
I'm not kidding. So he scratched my car. And then because of the way the traffic was, he just went off. So I got down and ran to him and said, yo, you've scratched my car. Park. So there was traffic. And I had to get to my car. By the time I go, he's gone. He is gone. You see, I mean, we have problems with the quality of the infrastructure we have here.
And then there's also
the software issue software in terms of driving. People are driving like they're crazy.
But where is enforcement? So you see, what this person did to you, in some places, there's a camera or there's a police.
Quick.
Here, and this is the thing. People will be reckless if there's no consequence for bad action. I am saying that we must deploy the police proactively. They should stop collecting money from people and rather focus on preventing some of these things that you've just spoken about. And when there's traffic pockets, we must deploy them to let traffic flow. Because
I've noticed that at certain times of day or on certain roads, you find police people, they're allowing traffic to flow when it's beginning to build. Sometimes when I go and do the Premier League preview show and I'm coming back to Adabraka to do Sports Panorama, I notice on the other side, that is when people are leaving town. You can find them at certain junctions allowing traffic to flow because I'm sure they recognize the fact that if the lights are allowed to work at that time, everything will slow down.
But you see, the police cannot solve what the pothole has created.
Of course.
Like this, I don't know the name of the place. A huge gully is there, and I don't know how much money it will cost. And the other question we need to go to quickly is local governance. Because you see, one of the problems with Ghana is everything is centralized. All right. I think if we don't fix local governance, we will not develop. Because the road I saw, which had street lights through, it's adjacent. Is the road that leads, those who know the road, it's called
VRA Road. It was meant for the thermal plants stuff.
It's called VRA Road. If that road can exist in a community like that, then the local government is, the government is too centralized. There's too much patronage at the top. It's not trickling down properly. Because you can't live in such houses and drive on such poor roads and be happy with it. If you had a sensible local governance structure where your resources are properly pooled together, I think we can fix our inner roads. Honestly, I have people who have companies who even bring material. There's a guy who says he has a company where he can do pavement blocks for roads.
Yeah.
All the trash in the community, mixed with sand, built into this pavement block, put it on the road, you can use it.
Yeah.
Because people forget that when the road is good, you spend less on car maintenance.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
So bad roads eat into your pocket, your lower arm, your shock absorbers. Totally. All of these things are breaking. Your ball joints, bearings, all these things. So you're spending more money to maintain your car. If the road is good, you know, so it's not just a convenience question. It's also an economic question. Then there's stress, health. If you spend 2 hours in traffic every day to work, you can't be productive.
No.
You can't sell, you can't buy, you can't do anything properly. So it's affecting people's life expectancy. And you can't be productive. Our productivity is going down.
Yeah.
Then there's pollution. You're smelling all these crazy
emissions
in your nose every day as you go to work. Accra is already hot. You don't have air conditioning in your car. We deserve better. And then there's road crashes because now you have motorway without street lights. You're driving and crashing every day.
Mm-hmm.
And people are using high beams and police escort to beat the traffic. They don't go through the same problem. You know, we have to demand for more. People who live in these communities need to rise up and say, no, this is not good enough. We have to let local governance work. Central government must pay attention. If you're building that road from Tema to Committee 22, funny thing, when you pass Afienya and you're going towards Akusombo, before you get to Shire Hills, you see a nice dual carriage road.
Yeah.
I think they did it because of the train. Why can't they do that for the whole road? It's a question of leadership and priorities. And citizens are too docile and citizens are too acquiescent of bad leadership, particularly at the local level. Our local governance doesn't work. The money doesn't trickle down. We've even centralized spraying, fumigation. Think about it. Things that are supposed to be done at the local level, yeah, all are done and procured centrally. That's not going to work, because where is the government going to start from? If we come together and say, every locality has this amount of money, let's raise internal resources, let's pay more taxes at the local level. If I can see the road, if I can see the street light, if I can see the amenities in my community, I'll gladly pay. So the centralized governance is not good for the type of development stage we are in. Because the development stage we are in, local governance is what you need to do. Because after the politicians, they are in Ejisu today because there's voting.
Yeah.
So they are moving like headless chickens.
And they are fixing roads.
Yeah, because they are looking for votes. Where will people in Kakasunaka be voting for them to get that road? So you see the flaw in the system. The system shouldn't be based on central dispersion, because the central government is not focused. But the people who live in the town, they know what they need and they know what they want.
Yeah.
I am saying that we have to make demands for local governance reform. We deserve better governance. Institutions must work. Road Safety Commission, Department of Urban Roads, Ministry of Roads and Highways, Ghana Police MTTD, the different MMDCEs. Wake up and lead. Living in Accra, living in Ghana, there's a lot of inefficiency. We have to be more efficient. Citizens, stop sleeping. Stop sleeping. Oh, wake up and do something. Ask your leaders. Go to next meeting. Send them a petition. Tell them you deserve a better road. Do what you have to do to demand them to work. They will never change until you do something. I'm telling you.
Because I was shocked to see the stress that people go through. For example, one of our friends, Laurentia, sent me a message. She said she left home at 5:30 a.m. and she's still in traffic. The sad thing is the BHM guys who are constructing the road from Pumbaria have stopped working. No explanation whatsoever. Collins also sends one and he says, anyway, the Dowenya route, dear. I'm currently on the motorway and the traffic is a hell. I agree with the conversations. It's really mind-blowing. And to be honest, I have not had that side of town on top of my mind like I have had for other areas.
Because you live
and I'm at the other side. And quite frankly, too, you don't hear a lot of protest, of agitation. People are tired, and that's the truth, you know. Because, Bernard, now everyone is trying to find a way of solving the problems, because you will complain, and in the end, you'll be gaslighted, right?
You complain. Mobilize, protest. Write letters, demonstrate.
It's crazy.
Boycott.
It's crazy.
You have to do something. Because
Saturday, no, it's not right. And
terrible.
And the point is that from Accra to Community 25 should not be up to 90 kilometers.
Bro.
It shouldn't take so much. And the truth is that, like you always say, everything is interconnected.
Telling you.
Everything is interconnected. If you come to the center of Accra, the cost of rent is very expensive.
So you have to move out.
Land is outrageous.
Very expensive.
So everyone is moving out.
And you're moving out and you're spending more on transportation.
Too much.
It's just not.
Too much.
What the system we are running is not sustainable. And if we don't make a change, I'm saying that it's too top heavy. The system that even elects our officials, like MPs, the patronage is too much. A system where you have to pay delegates to vote for you. We are not serious. We have to wake up. This delegate system where you go and meet in some corner, choose somebody because he's giving you flat screen and asking to be your MP and every week he's giving you school fees. It's going to destroy us. You know, some people say this democracy is not helping. And I don't want to say democracy is bad. The way we do it is what is bad.
Yeah.
Democracy can be very good if you do it sensibly.
Yeah.
The way we do it, this delegate system, payment of money to people, choosing square pegs in round holes, people who have no clue what it takes to lead, people who haven't run anything in their lives, you give them a whole community to manage, and all they are thinking about is a so-called tripod, and all they are thinking about is how much money they can make from the next contract.
It's not good.
That's not going to bring us development. So we have to also insist that our political parties must change the way they choose their leaders.
So Bernard, the members of parliament, they've been on vacation for some time now. How many of them are going to the communities to engage with the people and ask them what their priorities are? They say they are the people's representative. They're going to talk about?
They are going for funerals, they are going for outdoorings, they are going for community meetings so they can make sure that people vote for them. The issue of innovation. So, for example, I think the DCE position, people must apply for it like you apply for a job.
Yeah.
And even state agencies, this idea of putting politicians there is not sensible.
Running a city?
Apply for it. I'm told that in Kenya, it got to a point where they made the position of mayor so lucrative that vice chancellors were resigning to run cities.
Yeah.
If you want to develop Ghana, get your best minds in charge of spaces. It's called spatial development.
And leave them to work.
If you give a former vice chancellor or somebody who's run a company the mandate to run a city with a revenue collection mandate to manage the market, to manage the roads, I think they'll do a great job. But if you look for somebody who's been loyal to a political party,
has been general secretary of the party at the regional level, and that's what makes you mayor.
He is not even thinking about any change. He just wants to make sure the president is not angry with him. That is a minimalist approach. And Ghanaians, we have to demand these specific changes in the way we are governed. Just putting political apparatchiks in charge of communities. For me, the DC position, I think a DC is more important than a minister. When I did the flooding work, I realized the importance of assemblymen and DCs. Yeah. Minister position, fine. DCE, community leadership, management of space, is a big job. And we need to stop putting square pegs in these round holes. We need to stop putting political apparatchiks in sensitive local governance positions. We need innovation at the bottom. The same way we innovate in private sector, we need people who can innovate to say, okay, how can we ensure that those in 25 and surrounding areas get good roads, get good schools, get good hospitals, and also have security? What can we do together to ensure that quality of living goes up? That's the kind of leader we need in those communities. Appointing them, and I'm not even saying vote for them, because I'm not even sure it's a voting issue. It's a question of the quality of people we put there. I'm not sure voting has made us get good quality MPs. So I'm not even sure voting will give us good DCs.
Yeah.
There must be a blend between accountability to the top and the bottom.
Yeah.
But we, the Ghanaians, in managing these spaces, have to step up. Because the dystopia we see, the inconvenience we see, is a direct function of the quality of leadership that is being experienced.
Yeah.
4 minutes past 8, Tech and Social Media Trends, brought to you by FBN Bank. Nathan has the details. Caleb has the sponsor.
Yes, FBN Bank says first things first. And so all the time, if you're thinking of a bank, think of the bank that will put you first. Their financial services offer the gold standard of value and excellence. Their products and services have been designed just for you. You deserve the finer things in life, and banking is no exception. There's no better place to get the finer things and the gold standard in banking than FBN Bank. So if you think, or when you think of a bank that cares and puts its customers first, put the B before the N. Think FBN Bank. FBN Bank, you first.
Nathan has a segment for us. Quickly, let's get into it.
All right, let's get into the trends. And over the weekend, Yagbonwura and Gonja were in the trends. Over the weekend, so there was a function that the president was there, John Mahama was there, wow, and he had people talking. There were videos circulating of a bit of an issue between the president and the Yagbonwura. So many people were talking about that as well.
All right.
And to some sporting trends, because it was a weekend of very interesting football, the names Chris Wood, Mikel Arteta, Man City, of course, all of that in the trending. There was another hashtag, signing of the season.
All right.
Trending. So football fans were discussing who they thought was the best signing of the Premier League season. Names like Cole Palmer and Cole were mentioned. Some people mentioned Alexis McAllister. Others mentioned Josko Vardio of Manchester City as their picks for signing of the season.
Mm.
So that was that. In terms of some tech news quickly. Now, the U.S. government last Friday asked some leading AI companies for advice on how to use the technology they are creating to defend airlines, utilities, and other critical infrastructure, particularly from AI-powered attacks. The Department of Homeland Security said on Friday that the panel was going to include CEOs of some of the biggest and largest firms. So you have people from OpenAI, people from Microsoft, and some people from Delta Airlines. The move reflects the U.S. government's close collaboration with the private sector as it scrambles to address both the risks and benefits of AI in the absence of a targeted national AI law. So it looks like the conversation on AI is growing by day. And now governments want to embrace it, but they want to speak to industry people to get better insights on how to manage AI in the space.
Check out social media trends, brought to you by FBN Bank. You first.
This is the City Breakfast Show, the city's biggest conversation. The City Breakfast Show. Rise above the noise.
11 minutes past 8. We have lots of comments from those who live in and around those areas. Now, we are not forgetting every area. Sometimes you do case studies. Today's case study is 22-25. We're trying to get some answers. You guys need to get together. Committee 22 is Ashaiman Bonkatamanso. Mm-hmm. 25 is Ningo Pram Pram.
Right.
And part of Tema Trouble. East. Mm-hmm. You guys should wake up. There's any Fanny Form promo is on. Sign up for it from now till April 30 at any of our branches nationwide. And enjoy up to 2 free deliveries each month when you use your card on Glovo from now to October 20. With the Zenit MasterCard, you can conveniently make each day purchases on a POS device. You can also withdraw money from ATMs and pay for goods and services. Go to zenitbank.com.gh for more information.
Now, are you a young Ghanaian seeking stable, fulfilling employment? Look no further than the Ghana Growth Program brought to you by the MasterCard Foundation in collaboration with Springboard Roadshow Foundation and Limehouse. Ghana Grows ignites and ignites hope and guides you towards career opportunities in agriculture, agribusiness, technical and vocational skills. So whether you're 15 or 35, male or female, this program equips you with the skills to thrive, gain access to career guidance, counseling and essential skills training. Join us and contribute to the Ghana's growth through careers in agriculture. And AT Vet is an initiative of MasterCard Foundation in partnership with Springboard Roadshow Foundation and Limehouse. For more information, please call 0308255775.
Now, it's always a good time with Ghana's favorite malt drink, Malta Guinness. More tasty goodness for you in a new JJ can. So grab an ice-cold Malta Guinness in a new wonderful can and enjoy a world of good. Always look out for the Made in Ghana logo.
Join the Purple Experience to explore the future of banking, right, which comes with the first Atlantic Bank Digital Bank of the Year. With their awesome digital banking platforms, the first Atlantic Bank gives you a new digital world experience. Download the mobile app from Google Play Store or dial *442# for your bank transactions. Also available at the First Atlantic Bank Internet Banking, Corporate Pay, DigiPay, Master and Visa cards, and more. First Atlantic Bank, refreshingly different.
Now, Mother's Day is just around the corner, and Africa World Airlines is ready to make it special for you and your mother. Picture you and your mother through the skies, creating unforgettable memories above the clouds, and that can happen with the Celebrations in the Air service. It's all very possible. Just send an email to celebrations@flyafricaworld.com or call them to 0800-200-200 for more info. Book your tickets now and let's celebrate your mums in style.
Okay, so is Dumso back? Are you paying too much for electricity? Is your business crumbling because of the high cost of unreliable power and constant increase in electricity tariffs? Now get the Translight Solar Limited's affordable, tried and tested solar solutions. With Translight Solar Systems, you save on the cost of electricity and get consistent supply of power. Install a system from Translight Solar and enjoy uninterrupted power supply. Located at 98 Boundary Road, East Legon, in between ARS and the American House at the White House bus stop. Call us on 0504-249-229 or 0206-542-454 or visit www.translightsolar.com for early bird deals. Reach us via email at orhinr@translightsolar.com. Wherever there is sunlight, there is Translight.
Now, if you are thinking of buying a car, the VW Tiguan Allspace is a number one choice. You get to save 30,000 CDs. So drive Ghana, drive Volkswagen. Get your car now. Call VW Ghana on 0257956688.
Did you know that 259 stories are born every minute? Yes, 259 stories that matter, including yours. And every experience you have helps to shape your story into exciting adventures. We are inspired by them all, and your story has just begun. We invite you to write yours with us. Your story matters. Absa Bank.
I'm going to do a quick interview. Before that, tell me about Standard Water.
Bernard, Standard Water has over 25 years of experience in providing quality and refreshing water to quench your thirst. Standard Water gives you the following product: offering sachet water, bottled water dispenser, mounted jar water, customized water for your parties and other special occasions. So we are available for purchase from supermarkets, retail shops and sales delivery trucks. For quality water, drink Standard Water. Enquiries, call us 0202-055-70 three or 0547-334-385. This advert is FDA approved.
Here are some quick comments on the inconvenience of traffic, the danger of no street light on our roads, the terrible nature of pothole riddled pathways. All on our WhatsApp line, 054-998-6996.
Okay, my proposal for all the rough roads we see around can be taken care of by using pavement blocks. We have all the rocks around Afia Nyankoko and all around the country. The local assemblies should be taxed with these community projects, but corruption has blocked the minds of our officials. This one on my WhatsApp says, good morning, Siniavle. I have been involved with the local government people making demands for more than 4 years. You will be shocked to hear what I have been through there. And the very problems I've been chasing after still exist. When I look at the resources I've spent during this period, if not for the role I play in my community, I would have given up long ago. This is coming from Loveless. So citizen engagement and activism being frustrated here. Good morning, Bernard and team.
Morning.
I want you to use your platform to inform the state authorities in charge of toll booths to attend to the Kaswa toll booth because it's a death trap.
Is it?
Some part of the roof of the Kaswa toll booth hangs loosely and iron rods are also exposed. They shouldn't wait for something to happen before they come to read a long speech with big grammar. George from airport is giving cautions.
Yes, Juan. Good morning, my brother. I listened to you this morning driving in bad traffic from Pram Pram to Accra. And as I said to myself, I'm leaving this country by December. It's a joke. I concluded this morning, our leaders are wizards and witches. Bro, you ain't got nowhere to go. Stay and fight. We all can't leave. Good morning, Ben. I trust you're doing well. The traffic on the motorway this morning is serious. I'm unable to even tell what's causing it. Let me talk to Ahmed Nasir Yate. Mm. He is the head of communication, Ministry of Roads. Mm. Just a couple of quick updates. Ahmed, good morning. Thanks for joining the program.
Good morning, Bernard. Good morning to the team.
Wonderful. So, first point, Community 22 traffic is very, very bad. What stage has that road construction gotten to? Because part of the traffic has been occasioned by the bad nature of the road. Can you give us an update on that particular project?
Yeah, Bernard, you are right. You know that that road is under contract. I think 17 kilometers from some roundabout, motorway roundabout, towards Aflawo, is supposed to be dualized. This project has called due to the death exchange. If you move onto the road, you see there are several interchanges and overpasses being constructed on the road. Unfortunately, the project has stopped. Contractors are off-site, and most of the initial work they did is going bad because of the fact that they are off the road. The ministry, under the new minister, is taking steps to see how best we can move, we can extract some of the projects or the contract from the original one and get a local contractor to move in to salvage the situation and put the road into a very good riding surface to ease the burden of the road user.
My question was actually about 22, but you answered 25. What I wanted to ask was, in the interim, whilst you finish. Whilst you get a local contractor to do this, would it not be possible to clear the runabout? Because I suspect that the nature of the runabout worsens the traffic, because a lot of the runabouts don't have, like, the road is rough. So is there something that can be done temporarily while these new contractors take over the project?
Yeah, the temporary solution is what we are discussing. Both the motorway roundabout towards Afenya and then the one going towards Zoria. Those roads were all under contract. And but for the debt estate, those contracts would have been in advanced stage of completion. When you have a contract like that and you want to vary it, you need to go through some process. Otherwise, the law will catch up with you. And so that takes a bit of time. But the new minister is very committed to make sure that we handle this, because the feedback we are getting from motorists, we also experience the fact that people are suffering on that road too much. And so something must be done. And it's the same solution we are trying to bring over there, where the road network around the PTC should be improved. At least if we are not working on the interchange, the road network should be improved for people to be able to move around freely. And so that is the plan going forward. We are looking at the modalities and make sure that we are within the laws. We don't break any law. And then we allow the contractors to move in.
What about the Akosombo project, the one that goes through 22 Gulf City to Michelle Camp? That, again, the traffic was many cars, but the nature of the road made things worse. What's the status of that project?
Yeah, when I tried to deal with the two, because that project is also under contract and is facing the same situation as the one going to Aflao. And so it's the same treatment that we are trying to give to the two roads. And so get someone to come in, talk to the contractors who are holding the contract now, let them agree for someone to move in, since they are not ready yet. And since we are still negotiating with our creditors, our people cannot continue to suffer under this harsh traffic. And so we are negotiating to see some of the contracts to a local contractor so that they can move in and salvage it.
What about the motorway? You told me previously that there was a project going on to build two extra roads before we would rebuild the original motorway. Where has it gotten to?
Yeah, the motorway, what is happening now, initially the contractor moved in and cleared the alignment of the road. What is happening now is the relocation of utilities, that is the water and electricity. Usually that relocation takes about 6 months. And because we are building the motorway beginning from the service lane, if you don't relocate the utilities, the contractor cannot do much. And so as the contractor, the relocation contractor is working, we are using the same period to fine-tune and finalize the plan, the drawing for the motorway, so that the moment the relocation contractor is done, the main contractor can move in and work very actively on the service lane, finish it and move on to the main motorway. So as I speak to you, relocation of utilities is going on very seriously.
Why is there no street light on the motorway?
Well, this is a very, very big question you pose. You know, I will agree with you that authorities have some responsibility, but citizens also bear the biggest part of the responsibility, because then more often than not, I mean, I can tell you that we've had occasion to replace street lights on the motorway more than 3 different times. You procure, you install, and within a period of 3 to 6 months, it is gone. I mean, people have made it their business to always target street lights, traffic lights, and vandalize them. And it's a big challenge as to how to stop this kind of activities from the public. And so in as much as, Bernard, I heard you, talking about what authorities have to do, I think much of the education should also go to the public. You know, they should resist from sex.
So you're basically saying there's no street lights on the motor, because when you fix the street light, people steal the street lights. That's what you're saying.
And that is the truth. Because when you fix, if you go to the motorway now, I mean, if an authority fix street light, the authority has no business going to vandalize or spoil the street light. It's not there because people have made it their business to vandalize the street light. And these are things that takes time to procure. You cannot procure street lights and put down anticipating that it will be vandalized and you go and replace them. You replace, it's a project. So once the project is over, you expect that it lasts for some couple of years. And even if you have to replace, maybe one was poor, you replace it another year. But it's not the case where within a twinkling of the eye, almost all the street lights is gone. At times, people run into them and I mean, restore the street light. At times, the components are stolen overnight. And as I said, I agree that it's a challenge as to how to safeguard these street lights for the benefit of all of us. I heard you saying that maybe we should get the police to man these street lights 24/7. I mean, it's a tall order. I think the education should go down, and let's all educate ourselves that these are infrastructure that are put in place for the benefit of all of us. It doesn't help if one or two people wake up in the night and go and vandalize this thing, and we all suffer.
What's happening to Adenta Dodowa Road?
Well, like, your man is working seriously on that road. I don't know the last time we used that road, but Adenta to Dodowa, Kaswa to Winneba, massive construction going on. Looking at the pace of work, we are very, very sure that before the end of the year, we'll see those who applied that to those roads will see very much improvement in terms of the widening of the road and the ease of traffic.
So Adenta Dodowa and Kasua are on schedule. Would you say motorway is also on schedule?
Yes, motorway is also on schedule because without the relocation of the utilities, there's little the contractor can do. So the contractor has taken over site. Relocation of utilities going on very, very seriously. And once that is finished, contractor moved in with serious construction work. We didn't have much of that challenge on Adenta Dodowa and then Kaswa Winneba. But for motorway, where the utilities are placed, it's very important that they are relocated before the contractor can move in with all those heavy equipment to do the
concert. There's a lot more to talk about, but not enough time. So I'll call you again on a different day. But thank you for speaking to us as always. I'm Ahmed Nasir Yate, Head of Communication, Ministry of Roads and Highways. So you heard those updates. They are trying to get a new contractor to do the Dowenya Road, the dualization. The debt exchange has led to some financial challenges. Same for the 22 road as well. A local contractor taking over is what the plan is. 8:29. Before our next interview, here are more comments on the road situation.
All right. Okay, let's move on to this one. This one says, I spent 6 hours. Okay, the traffic on the Accra Cape Coast Road this morning was bad. I spent 6 hours instead of two from Swedru. The road contractor is quite insensitive. Ghana needs a fix in all sectors. Good morning, Bernard. There's a bridge at Community 12 that links you to Clagon. Most people don't know this. Most people don't know this. So maybe people should check it out. This one says, let me say that the underpass of the construction going on from Ofanko Barrier to Insam has no lights. It's scary using it at night. All right, this one says, the traffic situation is a symptom of a lack of spatial planning. Let me give you an example. From Dubai to Abu Dhabi is about 140 kilometers, the same distance as from Accra to Nkoko.
Okay.
It takes you 1 hour to do that. Okay? And then, another example, in Abuja, there are major roads called express, are about 4 to 8 lanes one way.
Expressway.
Expressway, 4 to 8 lanes one way, and then the same on the other side. Now, imagine Accra, imagine how Accra can expand if this were the case. Saglemi to the mall can be a 30-minute journey, but I don't need to tell you how long it will take you. Selassie sent that. This one says, I live in Tema Community 25. It's a terrible situation here. Going out and coming back, meeting traffic and manholes. It's even worse during the rainy season because it's double the wahala. Send that.
Terrible.
The way Ghana is being governed, I can assure you that we'll still drive on dusty roads in 2050. This one says, those of us living in communities 22, MF's Gulf City and Co. do not work there. We work in the Tema and Accra main cities, and this is what we deal with day and night. I'm struggling with cattle for space in the morning. To be honest, I shed tears when coming back after a hard day's work. Mamefua in Gulf City. All right, this one says, the tarred road you are referring to from KTPP past DPS school to DPS Junction was done purposely because of the thermal plant.
Which means we know what a good road is. Yeah. We know what street lights can do. And yet we do it for only the KTTP project.
Ben, okay, that's a different one. Ben from Kwabena says, the stretch under the trees from the Atomic Police Station is pitch black at night. However, the trees have been defiled with political banners. Help us let them know that this is not right. It's true.
Terrible.
It's true. Just after the Malcolm, we are going to Atomic Down. Hey!
It's a dance
with... Aloski, no light, oh!
It's terrible. Even if a tree branch falls, if it's raining.
Just imagine
Recently, a tree branch fell. Now, you know, because trees are living, their branches grow. So a part of the road has been almost like it's broken. It's like when you have inkati cake and you break it.
So the tree roots,
you know, have grown under the road such that because of a heavy wind, the tree fell. It's torn off a part of the road.
Whoa. Terrible.
Our branch here, Jojo, from Greater Estate says, please, talking about dark places, about Teship military from the Southern Command HQ to the training school to the police station. Not. A lady was robbed at the military school. So clearly, lack of light.
A few more comments before we jump into
I live at Boteman and work at Cantonment, and the motorway road and traffic situation is often unbearable. It can take you hours for a journey that should averagely take you about 40 minutes, even on a bad day. I have strategically been avoiding the motorway this year, opting to go through School Junction to use the new road to Boteman. It saves me about 30 minutes of just waiting to use the tunnel. Or if I have a full tank, go to do a U-turn on the Tema overhead echo in Boteman Center through. Bernard and team, good morning to you guys. My issue with the roads in this country is just how bad they get done in the first place. Look at the road leading to Kolebu Hospital and Polyclinic, Gan East Hospital, Shai Osudoku District Hospital. Priority roads are so bad, you wonder how the ambulance maneuvered their way in times of emergencies. Roads get fixed and just the rainfall overnight makes it worse than it originally was before getting fixed. Why do the contractors not get punished somehow? What is wrong with our leadership in this country? It's a long one, Benji.
Thank
from
you very much.
Frustrated.
Time check 8:33. A couple of quick interviews coming up. EdTech Mondays at 9 o'clock. Nathan will be talking about the gaming sector. Before that, the U.S. government is scheduled to host the Africa Maritime Forces Summit and the Naval Infantry Leaders Symposium Africa in Accra, starting today, the 29th to May the 3rd. It is in partnership with the U.S., with the Ghana Navy, the U.S. Naval Forces Africa, and the U.S. Marine Corps Africa. So it's a three-way partnership. Now, ahead of this program, I will be talking to Ambassador Robert Scott, who is the deputy to the Commander for Civil Military Engagement, United States Africa Command. He's in the studio to talk about this particular conference and symposium, the partnership of the U.S. Government and Ghana in maintaining security, and some general thoughts around security within the sub-region. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. Good to have you in the studio, Ambassador Scott.
It's very nice to be here. It's always good to come back to Accra. I lived here from 1995 to 1997, a long time ago.
Is it? Amazing. And you're back for this important conference.
Right. We are hosting. Mm-hmm. And first, thanks so much for allowing me to come on with you. If I can just do a minute on the actual event. It's an important one. What we have done is, starting a year ago, we have created a continent-wide security conference focused on the maritime sphere. So this is the African Maritime Leaders Summit, and we're combining that with the Naval Infantry Leaders Summit, so the Marines.
All right.
The soldiers
the guys
of the sea.
On water.
Exactly, the guys who fight on water, and Coast Guard and everybody else. Yeah. So there are 34 African countries. Mm-hmm. There are 8 NATO, European, and North American countries. Mm-hmm. We have Brazil and Colombia as well. It shows you how the Atlantic is kind of the common goods area. Mm-hmm. The concept is to talk about security on the seas and the importance that has for the blue economy, for fishing, illegal fishing, for trade. 90% of all of our trade comes through the sea.
Yeah, and why Ghana as the host?
Ghana has a history of being a regional leader. I think that its central role in the Gulf of Guinea initiative, which is the Yaounde Code of Conduct, is important here. I think West African and Gulf of Guinea states are in the forefront of coming up with a common approach on a really tough issue. How do you deal with fish that don't respect borders? Right? They go up and down the coast.
Yeah.
And how do you deal with fishing fleets that don't respect laws? And how do you deal with piracy? And how do you maintain an awareness of what's going on off your shoreline? And all those things will be discussed at the conference.
Give me a summary of the security situation in West Africa as it pertains to both the sea, which is piracy, and the land, which is terrorism.
I mean, you know, huge challenges right now, as you know. I think that on the sea, as I pointed out, we're seeing ultimately, it's going to be the countries, the leaders in the region that set the agenda. The United States is here as a partner. We're here to assist. We're here to fill gaps as we can. But we're here as a partner. We're not the lead on this.
Yeah.
And security, the concept of security isn't just military, as you know. In fact, it's not military. It's development. A women's shea butter collective creates economic prosperity, which allows an area to prosper. But security and the armed forces and the coast guards provide the envelope which allows that prosperity to happen by safeguarding the patrimony of a country. So in the maritime area, I think that that's what we're looking at. How do all these countries come together to safeguard the seas and the trade on the seas? In the Sahel, what you're talking about right now, very tough situation. Violent extremist organizations. It was just starting when I was here 30 years ago. The challenge again is a lot of this has to do with the provision of justice, the provision of economic opportunity for populations. And that's where the United States comes in with our partners as well. We lead with development aid and assistance, USAID, MCC. We also have a military that partners with local militaries, but it's a holistic approach.
How concerned are you about the sort of, how shall I say, there seems to be less interest in having U.S. presence within the sub-region. I can talk about Burkina Faso, I can talk about Mali, I can talk about Niger, and just yesterday, Chad, in this very volatile area. How concerned are you about the way the leadership and sometimes the citizens of those countries are increasingly getting impatient with U.S. military presence within the sub-region?
Again, we're not in the lead. People make choices. We can't impose ourselves, nor would we ever impose ourselves. So we offer a partnership which is broad and brings development assistance, brings health programs like PEPFAR. It brings agricultural development. By the way, in all those countries that you mentioned, our embassies are still open. USAID is still active. And we're still doing a lot of programming to assist the populations. In Niger, currently, we have a delegation up there to talk about the withdrawal. To make sure it's orderly, and we'll work our way through all of that with leadership. In Chad, we've repositioned troops on a normal rotation, but following the May 6 elections, we anticipate going back in to renegotiate or negotiate our security agreement with the Chadian authorities. So it's tough. We're not a dominant player, but we want to be a partner in the region. While the region sets its own agenda in how it's going to address common security issues. But we certainly are active to be here to assist as and when needed those countries that are reaching out to us.
How do elections complicate security apart from the Chad situation? Ghana has a big election in December. Senegal had an election a month ago, and Togo has some kind of election. Just are your thoughts going to be around the election security as well? Is that one of the factors you look at when you discuss security in the sub-region?
You know, I would love to go that far with you, but I am not an expert in the regional elections. You know, we're here for the event, the specific three-day event. So my focus is on that. Obviously, it impacts regional security on maritime security. I'm going to have a chance tomorrow to go to Tema. We have a ship there, the Woody Williams. It's an 800-foot ship that comes up and down the coastline for years now, and we're going to do some engagements there. We're also going to visit a USAID IUUF project to deal with a local community that is dealing with a decrease in its fishing take. How do we react in this case, to something that globally is costing all of our economies collectively over $50 billion in lost income?
I'll come to the conference. Let's talk about Ghana. What's the nature of U.S. command's presence and partnerships in Ghana?
Well, specifically, the dollar figures are about $130 million of security assistance. Now, security isn't just military. So that might be from the international Narcotics and Law Enforcement Bureau at the State Department coming in and doing border security issues. That's DEA taking a look at drug smuggling, wildlife poaching with Fish and Wildlife. We have one program that we're looking at during our conference here. Our four-star general, General Langley, the commander of AFRICOM, is here. The commander of Naval Forces Africa, Admiral Munch, is here. And our Marine General, General Softier, here. And they're looking at specific projects with Ghana. We're doing a $6 million project on small boats.
Okay.
So this allows the Ghanaian special forces to reach out off the littoral, off the coast, and have an ability to interdict and intercede. And that's incredibly important. But so is the whole of government. So we're also doing a seminar during this conference on what's called the legal finish.
Okay.
How does a magistrate in Ghana or Cote d'Ivoire or the United States deal with something that's occurred on your seas that's illegal under your law? It's a tough question. So we're trying to make sure that we cover all these things.
So you're talking about a small boat initiative. There's a concern about bigger vessels that find their way into our waters. They engage in legal fishing and that type of thing. Does the collaboration and assistance get to the point of higher level vessels too?
Sure. We have something called Obengami Express. So the reason that we created this new summit starting last year was we used to have, we still have three exercises around Africa in the Mediterranean, West Africa, and East Africa. The one in West Africa is called Obengami Express. It's about to start soon. We used to have a summit attached with each one regional. We've taken all that and put the entire continent together here in Accra for this summit to deal with the issues that you're talking about. These large fleets of ships that could be offshore, first you need to know who's off there. There's a technology called Sea Vision that we're sharing with our partners that allows you, if you and I had a computer right in front of us right now, in four clicks we could take a look at a 20 square kilometer coast section of sea off the coastline. We could identify those fishing trawlers that are transponding, that are saying, this is who I am, I have a license. Then we could click again, all the ships that are off there that are not transponding, that we would presume are not there doing legal activities. We can also know who those ships are because they're giving off other electronic signals, and this is all commercially available. And then you can take a look at who it is. Are they going outside of Ghana's EEZ, and are they offloading a fish? So we can find out who they are and what they're doing. The next question is, what do we do about it in any country? Do we have the coast guards and the resources to go off our shores and to make sure that the fish that we need, that our children and our grandchildren will need, are safe? And that's what this conference is looking at. How do we safeguard our seas and our blue economies?
Wonderful. We are now in a multipolar world. So I want to know how it complicates the assistance, because maybe 40, 50 years ago, you could say it was simpler. Now there's US, there's Russia, there's China, there's EU. By the way, who are your other partners on this before we even get that? So is the US going with Ghana and Africa alone, or are there other partners of yours supporting?
So for this conference, there are 33 countries coming. So we invite everybody, basically. We're looking at their 38 littoral countries that have a coastline in Africa, and they all share the same issues. And even those countries that don't have a coastline are dependent on
fish. They depend on coastline, definitely.
70% of all the protein for some countries comes from fish out of the sea. And so if you can't get that, your economy hurts, your protein hurts, your population hurts. So we're partnering with every country that's coming here. Ghana is our host country, but we certainly have North African countries, East, West, Southern African countries that are here with their naval leaders, with their attorneys, with all of those that are part of the of the ecosystem that safeguards our seas. And we're here to exchange ideas. I'll just tell you that the Gulf of Guinea is in the lead on this. The Yaounde Code of Conduct allows you to have hot pursuit. That is impressive. For governments to negotiate hot pursuit across their into their sovereign seas is a hugely important step.
So the second part of the question has to do with, you know, you have boots on the ground in, in West Africa. And I know back in the U.S. there's a lot of concern. Not everybody, not every parent wants their daughter or son to go to faraway places and be endangered. So my question is, how are the Europeans, how are the Germans, how are the South Koreans collaborating on the kinds of things you do within the West African sub-region? So like the AFRICOM, is it purely still U.S. or are there other allies who provide other resources to balance out your deployment within the place?
We partner with other countries. Our headquarters are in Stuttgart in Germany. So AFRICOM headquarters is actually in Stuttgart. We have liaison officers from over 20 countries that are there. And so we use those liaisons to speak to other countries and their militaries about things that we might do together. So we can do things with Germany, the Czech Republic, We're looking at this Atlantic issue with Brazil. There's a very large number of countries that are interested in engaging, but most of them like to do it with partners. And so we offer ourselves up as a good, strong partner that allows other countries to engage in Africa as well.
We're talking to Ambassador Albert Scott. He's the deputy to the Commander for Civil Military Engagement, U.S. States Africa Command. They are here for the Africa Maritime Forces Summit. It's happening from today to the 3rd. It's also a Naval Leaders Symposium, and it involves quite a number of people. So what type of person is attending? Are these just soldiers and naval captains, or are there also civil society groups? Are there civilians? Just give me a sense of the participation.
So we have think tanks. We have academics who are looking at these issues because they're complex. We certainly have the leaders of the navies and of the coast guards. So there are admirals here. So it's a broad set of development, of security, of diplomacy, which all has to go together, right? This is a probably one of the most important issues that we deal with. Again, 90% of the trade of this world takes place on the seas. The ocean is one of the hardest places for a country to establish control.
Yeah.
It's so large. It's hard to know what's going on there. And so we look at maritime domain awareness, which is a way of saying, do you know what's happening off your shore?
Yeah.
And so all of us are there. And then we talk to, like I said, I'm going to go to a USAID project tomorrow in Tema. All of this security is there so that the people of a country can prosper from the things which are theirs, the fish in the sea, the trade that comes into their ports.
Final thought on Ghana. So you've already talked about the Sahel region and the challenges there, and you've spoken about Ghana's historical role in leading within the sub-region. But there's a sense in which Ghana has become like the haven in a quite volatile sub-region. What's your comment around what Ghana needs to do to keep that? Because from Senegal all the way down to even to Nigeria, from the Sahel region down to the coast, we seem to be the country that has a semblance of stability and peace, right? And the media is quite free as well, and there's a lot of discussion around these issues openly.
Right.
So what does that mean for the sub-region, and what's the plan? Are you going to use Ghana as some sort of anchor to sort of spread that type of thing across the sub-region?
Again, we're here to work with those who want to work with us. My sense is that Ghana has a key role in the sub-region, in the region. As I said, the Gulf of Guinea initiative on the oceans. I think for any government, it's the provision of justice and security and economic opportunities. And ultimately, my message is just that U.S. AFRICOM is just a part of the engagement from the U.S. and from the people of the United States. Reaching out to others to work with them to ensure that we all have a brighter future. I mean, it sounds oversimplified, but ultimately that's what it is. Real hard issues, development, diplomacy, and defense coming together. And Ghana's role, I think, is key in the region.
I like the three Ds: development, diplomacy, and defense. Thank you very much, Ambassador Robert Scott.
Thank you so much for having us. We look forward to hosting our event here over the coming 3 days. Thank you again.
Wishing you successful deliberations as ever. So that was Ambassador Scott. You heard him first on the City Breakfast Show. Time check, 10 minutes to 9. Still coming up, a big discussion on technology, edtech.
This is the City Breakfast Show. The city's biggest conversation. This is the City Breakfast Show. The city's biggest conversation.
5 minutes to 9, City Breakfast Show.
So much to talk about. A few quick announcements for you.
That's right. Let's celebrate everything Ghanaian by showing up in outfits made from genuine, authentic GTP fabrics, introducing the latest GTP new style collection with unique designs inspired by our culture and embedded with symbols that unite us as Ghanaians. Go ahead and grab the new Ghana Month collection from GTP, available at all accredited GTP dealers nationwide, the GTP retail store in Osu, or online at shop.gtpfashion.com. Let your outfit say, I am Ghanaian. I wear GTP Mifri Ghana. Check the authenticity of any GTP fabric you purchase by matching the code on the edge of the fabric with the code on the label. GTP Lifestyled. Are you a young Ghanaian seeking stable, fulfilling employment? Look no further than Ghana Grows Program, brought to you by the Mastercard Foundation in collaboration with Springboard Roadshow Foundation and Limehouse. Ghana Grows ignites hope and guides you towards career opportunities in agriculture, agribusiness, technical and vocational skills. So whether you're 15 or 35, male or female, this program equips you with a skills to thrive. For more information, please call us on 0308-255-775. If you're dreaming of the perfect sofa to upgrade this year, your dream sofa is now a reality at Latex Foam, introducing a sensational V-Sofa range and more. The L-shaped V-Sofa goes for 3,100 and the V-Sofa set goes for an unbeatable 6,500 Ghana cedis. Hurry, your perfect sofa awaits. Latex Foam is your partner for life. Now give your eyes the best attention they deserve. Don't joke with your eyes' health this year. We have more than 33 years of experience at Robert and Sons Limited, and we are happy to give you all-day comprehensive eye testing with molding equipment, eye specialist services, pediatric eye care services, visual field testing, retina damage detection scan, and 100% original and unbeatable frames and optical products, including contact lenses and solutions. So visit us in Adabaka, Osu, Dankwa Circle, Tema Community 6, Wager, East Legon, Adenta, Kumasi, Ahojo, Koforidua, and our new ultra molding at Bridport Junction branch in Kumasi. Call us on 0302-222-601 or 0501519111, or visit us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Robert & Sons Limited. Robert & Sons Optical Services, seeing is believing.
Couple of quick birthdays coming through. Happy birthday to Martin Kwekwe, CC of the Minerals Commission, and Kontihini of Rara. Thanks for the visionary leadership and the bold steps in transforming the commission. From the board, management, and entire staff of the commission. Coming in from happy birthday, Nana CEO. Coming in from Emmanuel Jari. Emmanuel Jari. Happy birthday to my daughter, Efree Bempoma Pumpuni Asante. She's 8 years old today. Message is, I love you. The song is Savage Garden. I knew I loved you. Well, we don't have time to play the song, but it's coming from that to you, Efree Bempoma Pumpuni Asante. You're 8 years old today. Daddy says happy birthday to you. What's happening on EdTech this morning, Nathan?
Well, we are talking gaming and EdTech, and we want to figure out how to enhance student engagement using interactive learning solutions. We do know that children learn better when they play. So want to find out the place of gaming in the classroom and how we can incorporate that into mainstream.
Who are we talking to?
Well, of course, when we talk about gaming, we can't have a conversation without Maximus Ametogo. He's founder and CEO of the Esports Academy.
Okay.
Aram Teria will also be joining us. He's CEO and co-founder of Letty Arts. Then we have Priscilla J. Mensah, who's a mental health and well-being specialist. Of course, when you're exposing children to screens and all of that, you need to think about their well-being. So it's important that we have that too. Balance the conversation out this morning.
We can't wait to hear you. Nathan Kwao is live with his guest on EdTech Monday. It's brought to you by the Mastercard Foundation with support from the Meltwater Entrepreneur School of Technology and City Breakfast Show.
This is the City Breakfast Show, the city's biggest conversation. The City Breakfast Show. Rise above the noise. Thank you.
9 on the dot, and you're welcome to another exciting episode of EdTech Monday, live on City 97.3 FM. My name is Nathan Kwa, the moderator for the session. And today, we are talking EdTech and gamification. The topic excites me so much. We want to talk about enhancing student engagement using interactive learning solutions. Now, we do know that because these days we are doing a lot of remote and hybrid learning, we are integrating tech into the classroom. Gaming has become an important pillar. We want to understand what gamification is, and we want to draw out the role gamification can play in improving learning outcomes. We want to understand the ecosystems required to support the idea of gamification, look at the opportunities and challenges, and as well as the system shifts that we need to put in place to ensure success and sustainability. All of that part of EdTech Monday. Now, what is EdTech Monday? It's a platform for EdTech entrepreneurs, education stakeholders, and government reps to facilitate critical conversations on the use of technology for teaching and learning. It's a part of the MasterCard, or it's an initiative of the MasterCard Foundation's Regional Center for Innovative Teaching and Learning in ICT. And all of that is happening because we want to find solutions to Africa's youth unemployment by closing the gap in access to quality education and advancing the integration of technology in education policies and practices across the continent. That's why EdTech Monday exists and is born out of the partnership between the MasterCard Foundation and MEST Africa. Now, EdTech Monday airs every last Monday of the month on City 97.3 FM on radio. And you can watch it live on social via City 97.3 FM's Facebook page or MEST Africa's Facebook page. Now, today to talk about gaming, like I said earlier, we can't have this conversation and not have Maximus Ametogo around. Now, he's the founder and CEO of the Esports Academy. He's a multifaceted esports entrepreneur and digital marketing professional. He founded the Esports Academy to empower the youth through gaming, and he's been organizing top esports events in Ghana. But he doesn't invite me. I don't know why he doesn't invite me. Now, he has over 10 years in experience in event organization, and he's a pivotal figure in esports education and holds significant roles in global esports federations, and he's promoting digital sport across Africa. Maximus, thank you for joining us, and
thank
welcome.
Thank you, Nathan.
Right. We can't also have this conversation without Leti Arts. Aaron Terry, I see you, and co-founder of Leti Arts. Now, he has over 20 plus years in the game development industry. He's the CEO and co-founder of Leti Arts, a pioneering sub-Saharan African game development company. Now, they are at the forefront of enriching African storytelling through interactive games and comics. And I like that. The African story must be told. So it excites me. Now, he's led gamification projects for USAID and the UNDP, GIZ, the JHPIEGO, and global NGOs in Africa. And he's also a lecturer of game design at Ashesi University, and he's an author. He has a book titled Uncompromising Passion. Aaron, good morning. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Dayton.
All right. Now, to balance the equation out, we have Priscilla Ejie Mensah, who's a psychologist, educator, and student well-being expert, and she's passionate about supporting the academic and personal success of young people. Now, in her role as a school social-emotional counselor and well-being facilitator, Priscilla works closely with over 300 students and from 50 different countries, providing them with the resources, skill sets, and guidance they need to thrive in their formative years. Priscilla, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Nathan.
Wonderful.
Happy to be here.
Wonderful. You know, I love it when we have a counselor. I always say that my school counselor back in Accra Academy was very critical to my own success.
Nice.
So I'm always happy when I come across school counselor. If it were not for her, I don't think I'd have written my SSCs. She encouraged, said, "Oh, you'll be fine." We came out fine. Guys, thank you so much for joining us. Thank you once again. Let me start off with you, Maximus. We've talked a lot about gamification in EdTech. What is the idea of gamification in EdTech, and how is this used at various levels of education to improve learning outcomes?
Yeah, thank you very much. I think gamification is a methodology used to teach the same subject in more immersive and interactive way.
Okay.
Using gaming, how games are designed, from storytelling to badging system, leaderboards, whether it's multiplayer, single player, or whichever approach to you know, express the subject in a more natural and interactive way than just the textbook and passive way that we learn. So basically that is using a game design approach to teach the same subject.
Okay.
Yeah.
And how do we use this at various levels?
Yeah, so of course it varies. If at the basic level or kindergarten, if you put maybe blocks of Legos together and say they should build something, they can use it to build a structure and ask them to explain the design, the idea behind the structure. And they can also compete. If you say, okay, everybody, you are given 10 blocks, build a house. Okay. Then they can come and design their own house and come and present the houses. Or you are given 3 different colors of blocks. And then you are supposed to pick 2 each. And they say, okay, can you put 2 yellow and 3 red together? And they are able to do that. It's learning, but you are using interactive way to do that. Right, you can also put them in a group and they can work together for basic level. Then, of course, you have the electronic version where you can play games, match letters, or you can even draw the alphabet. If you are learning how to draw an A, and then there's an apple, and A stands for apple, and then I'm giving the shapes to trace the A. I'm learning how to draw the alphabet on the tablets or electronically. So that's for that level. Then you go to the basic level, the primary schools. You can learn Minecraft to learn how to, you know, build environments, right? You are supposed to create an inventory first. You go and look for resources first. And you have to understand physics, maths, and all that, even color combinations, the various resources that you have. So if you are building a house, what is the foundation, the door, the structure, the wood you need? You need to feed yourself. How do you even create a protective structure around your distance so that mobs will not come and invade your facility? It's all part of the learning process. Then you go to the universities where a science lab, okay, is on a VR headset.
Okay,
then you can simulate the process. So you wear it and then you understand the anatomy of the human body. It's no more a textbook where you'll be looking at muscles. This way you can feel it, break them apart, and then learn more about that. Even to the higher level where people do business strategy using simulations and all that. So at every stage in the educational process, you adopt gamification, you adopt electronic form of learning. To make it more immersive and more interactive.
I see. Wonderful. That's a great place to start. If you're listening to us, you can send in your messages on 0549-986-996. You can also drop your comments on our Facebook page. And if you're watching us via Mest Africa's Facebook page, you can drop your comments there as well. Let me bring in Aram and Priscilla. The question to you is, how do interactive learning solutions enhance student engagement? And how different is that when we compare to the traditional teaching methods of chalk in a board or a marker in a board?
Yes. So as Maximus explained, games actually reinforce things that we learn, that we consume.
Okay.
So gamification, as he explained, is consciously putting gaming elements in our normal activities. It could be even journalism, right? We can gamify you coming to work and giving you missions. If Nathan is able to do 3 interviews at a row, he gets a badge, and that badge can give you a discount. So when you put those elements in any learning process, that retention of consumption and reinforcement works. I learned to drive through a video game, right?
I see.
The gears and all that, right? And when kids interact with these environments, they are able to absorb faster than if I tell my kids, let's learn math. Nope, he will shy away. But let's play, let's say, FIFA.
Mm-hmm.
And through that, he gets to learn how to pass the ball, how to calculate all those angles. And that's where Leti Arts also comes in. Mm-hmm. So at Leti Arts, our mission is to, instead of mentioning FIFA and the rest, we now bring in our own stories and culturalize it in your environment.
Okay.
Because we all grew up with very foreign mythologies. I got to read about the Nordic mythology, Thor, all these big things. Whilst we have our Yas and Tours, Anansis and the rest. So if you look at Leti Arts, we have about some games online. Mm-hmm. We have Sweave, which brings Kente elements, weaving elements with Edinkra symbols and all that. Now my kids, when they see any Edinkra symbol, they are like, hey, this is what? Owachidie, or there's, and there are also symbols from Ewe tradition, like there's Nuklege, all these kind of symbols. They learned it through this Sweave game. And we have like Puzzle Scout, where they interact, experience Africa through the British colonies through to the Kwame Nkrumah independence, and then so you can tell these historic stories through video games and African superheroes in Africa's legends, where they see a superhero, like they see Anansi as a superhero, and then they battle it out with friends, and it passively puts all these names in their mind, right? So just merely creating excitement for the child changes his psychological mindset towards the topic that you are teaching the child. Mm. So, as he mentioned, Minecraft was built by Microsoft, like an international company, right? But how do we localize it in our environment? Okay. How do we build, let's say, this circle environment within Minecraft and create a story bit within them to explore? Or you see kids playing Roblox, chatting with their friends and competing with their friends in people's virtual environments. So we now have to teach the kids that, hey, you can play the games and learn. Yet you can also create these games, right? And that is how come I'm really proud that Ashesi University adopted game design as an elective last semester. Okay. And we had our first students that went through successfully. Mm. It means that now, at the tertiary level, people can now be equipped with gaming skill sets to help the ecosystem start creating these games, right? We have these coding initiatives. We have all these Ghana Code Club, Sronko Academy, all teaching code. It's good. But in doing that, we have to try to localize it. Because my son came to me recently and it's like, Daddy, are only villages in Africa? I'm like, no, I just came from the US and I was at a place where there was no electricity, right? You know, but because everything looks very good in the foreign games, they tell the best part of their culture, how can we also preserve it in that format so that they can also know that, oh, Africa can also grow, right? So I think in creating excitement within our curriculum, that is the way that we can let our kids relate to the topics that we teach. Math can be made easy. History can be made easier. Social studies can be made easier. Just putting basic competitive elements, quizzes, puzzles, word search, you know, jigsaw stuff. Massimo talked about drawing an A. Who can draw it better? Who can color better? All these things are things that these kids need to engage with. Mm. And they will definitely absorb.
I see. Priscilla, let me bring you in. Your take on this thing, the same topic as well. How do interactive learning sessions or, you know, learning solutions, how do they differ when you compare them to the traditional methods?
Yeah. So as Ayram and Maximus mentioned, we sometimes tend to forget about how important thinking of developmental milestones are when it comes to education. Mm. So most times, a lot of teachers or a lot of educators put a bunch of students in the classroom. Mm-hmm. They're not really sure of where each one is at developmentally. Mm-hmm. And imagine asking all of them to solve a math problem. You're going to have people having different approaches or how their minds process information. So gamification has a lot of benefits when it comes to helping young students have a different experience in education. Now let's look at the statistics in psychology.
Okay.
So pre-COVID, the average attention span of a teenager is like 30 minutes.
30 minutes?
30 minutes. Okay. And that is in optimum conditions where the student or this teenager has access to all the things needed to thrive. now with the onset of COVID and having to stay at home and using a lot of educational technology tools, we've had young people have an influx of information overload. And also the impact of having very short videos pumped into their screens on a daily basis. So the impact of things like TikTok, the impact of YouTube shorts, or even just watching videos that are very short spaced. It has really decreased the attention span.
Wow.
Now, in most parts of Europe, the attention span of an average teenager is 10 minutes.
10 minutes? 10 minutes.
So imagine having to a child having to sit in the classroom for 4 hours.
Yeah.
In the first 10 minutes, the attention span is gone.
Wow.
So the rest of the information being shared just passes through one ear, comes out the next. And you have students saying, yes, I went to school, but I don't remember what I studied. So it's very important that when we bring about these new interventions, something like gamification, because it's very interactive, it's not just the passive system like the traditional learning methods where the students sit in the classroom and the teacher just teaches or provides information. They're being active participants. Also, it's meeting the needs of different learning styles. So we have people who are auditory learners, we have people who are sensory learners, you have people who are visual learners. If you're in a space where the game has pictures, has videos, has sounds, or has times where you have to work as a group, you're meeting the different learning needs, because a child might be more engaged if it's a visual information, or if it's sounds, auditory, or if they're working together as a team. So you're able to meet the needs of these children, and it's very important in helping develop a good learning experience.
Wonderful. Let's talk about Ghana's pulse when it comes to gamified learning and how we can improve, and if there are any mental shifts. So Aram and Maximus, maybe you can handle that.
Yes, so I think for Ghana, we have been championing this for the past 20 years. I have been a gamer since my childhood, right? And starting this industry, I've seen it grow from nothing to something.
Okay.
Right? Kickstarted the whole African gaming industry. And now the world is talking about gamers. We have esports companies who are competing at global levels, right? And Ghana is proud to also be sending athletes.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
We have game companies that have sprung up from Ghana, Leti Arts being one. We just started the Game Developers Association, very young association, putting it together. Then there's the Esports Association as well. So these bodies have now sprung up. So we can say that Ghana, it's getting somewhere. The government might not have come in yet, but when these bodies come up, then the government has no choice to start playing ball with the bodies. And I would say that in gaming also, we don't have to forget the disability, like inclusion space, right? It is heavily male dominated, but girls also have to come in. Like it's also going on its cycle. Then the disability side also comes in. It's only through games that you can break down some of these sensitive issues. Like we did a comic with Farida on cerebral palsy superhero in Kamza, right? That comic went global, like people from Australia, everywhere. Then now we are making a game on Kamza, and there are people with cerebral palsy who call and say that, hey, this superhero is really giving me
it's
inspiring me, right? We now have gamers, like kids who are testers. I have one listening to me, Juno. Shout out Juno, because she plays every game and she's a tester for us, an active game tester. We make a game for a client, she'll pick it up and start playing and tell you, oh, let's do this, let's do that, and she has a reason to now love what she does. My kids play games so much that my wife is concerned. Why are they playing? And I'm like, no, they need to play it. And what I tell them is that if you play the game, play it well, right? Because did you get better? Did your score get better? Right? You need to play the game and play it well. And if you do that, they are able to absorb better and also want to be better. Of course, the mental side of things are there.
We'll get
they
to that.
They play the game and they fail. Then their friend is doing better than them. They feel like they start feeling less about themselves. Mm-hmm. But it's a game. So that's even where you tell them that, look, this is a game, because you get the chance to do it again. It's not real life. So they can even learn how to be open to life, right? Mm-hmm. Life skills that, hey, things don't always go right, but I can always try it again and be better. So the pulse of gaming in Ghana, I think now it's around 40%.
Okay.
Because the base is building. It needs the government to come in to make it, to scale it beyond what it is.
I see. Maximus?
Yeah, I think what Yaram said, I agree with everything he said. We need policy direction, okay, right? So from the game development to publishing to the infrastructure, and then to the fact that we need to adopt it as a methodology in learning at various levels of education. For some of us being in the space of esports for over 15 years, it's quite surprising. You know, we organized an event for people to come and play, and it was sponsored by one of the telecom companies. They wanted to do radio art, TV art, yeah, and all that. They said, no, we have the community on lockdown. Right, when we opened the registration, one game we had 734 people registering within 3 hours. Yeah. So by the time they posted on their social media page, the slots were sold out. This is an underground, you know, unadvertised. Yes. So it's something that is there. We need to optimize. We need to
make, you know, it more mainstream.
Exactly. Yeah. So we took 17 gamers to Saudi Arabia last year,
yeah,
and they were like, some of the parents were quite surprised that their daughter who is playing video game can go to Saudi Arabia to get and compete on international level, yep, you know, fully paid for.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
it is a big industry.
Exactly.
Look, just to plug into that, you know, the Premier League as we know it now, yeah, has an esport component, yeah, where it's like big time,
yeah, exactly, yeah. Commonwealth,
yeah. FIFA, yeah. FIFA now has actually, yes, an official, yeah,
so we formed the national e-football team with GFA, yeah. So it's a Black Asteroid, so yeah, we took them to Dubai last 2 years and last year. So for me, at the various levels we have that, yeah. Now you learn so many things from that. We are forming one, even Presec, we are forming an esports club in yeah, Presec, so that, and because it's multi, you know, disciplinary, right? So from, talk about any course, general art, you need somebody to tell stories. Mm-hmm, if I want to build a game on how to climb a mountain, if I'm learning the geography of a mountainous area, I can put all those elements in the game.
Okay.
By the time you are done playing, you've learned the same chapter that you are going to read in text format.
Yeah.
You know, and you are limited in terms of how you interpret text.
Yeah.
But when you are learning interactively, you can see everything visually, you interact with it, it is more immersive, you can absorb it better. We have that. The schools, of course, they've started Scratch and then Minecraft,
yeah.
So everybody's trying to introduce some elements of gamification into the system. So we need it at the higher level.
Mm.
That's yeah, very important, in addition to what Ayama said.
Yeah. And Nathan, yeah, probably to add just a bit to it. Right, you know, gaming is bigger than the movies, the music, and now sports,
yes,
okay,
industries combined, right? And in Finland, for example, it employs almost 30% more, wow, than all skills, because it is an industry that requires all skill sets. When you play a game, you can make money. In making the game too, you make money. Mm-hmm. And those who actually consume it also make money from it, right? So it's the silver bullet that we need to bring all skill sets together.
Okay.
Right? We need writers to craft their narratives.
Yes. Yeah.
Then you need programmers to put the programming. Then you need the artist to showcase, like to show the visual. Then you need the sound, the voiceover, like mm-hmm, you have a great voice. I will need you in one of our you know, and then you have the esports team springing up. We have Play Province, we have Ace Gamers. All these guys now, they've been playing a lot of foreign games, but we've consciously now signed a deal where they play the local games we make, because people have to play them before we can also make something. So though the quality might not be the one, because we don't have that much funding to compete, yeah, but the companies locally are doing their best to reach that, those standards.
Okay.
Yeah. So they are enjoying it and they are playing it.
I see. Right.
And you know, just to touch the Finland,
yeah.
When we talk about education and ranking the world, they are number one.
Yeah, and the happiest.
Yes,
they're
and happiest.
The happiest.
Yeah, so I mean, they play video games, they play games, they do gamification, and they're happy.
I mean, my next question is about the successful implementation of gamification education. Mm-hmm. So maybe you can give us more. You mentioned
Finland.
You mentioned Finland, but what other examples?
Yeah, so we have Finland, we have Brazil, they have that, the USA, South Korea, Singapore.
Do we have any in Ghana? Any great successful stories?
Of course, Ariam and Co, they are pushing, they have all the puzzle scouts, you know, building the history of Ghana into a game. You know, we have the Nubia VR and Relu.
Is doing Relu Interactive.
Okay. They are all building these solutions.
Like the companies are there, but the adoption is still at the foreign level.
Okay.
Like now that Minecraft is coming in, we also have, there's a game that we will be launching out soon called the Heroes League. Like, Heroes League is a US-based company, EdTech company, that is played over 12 billion US. But they licensed our character, Kamza, to teach cultural literacy within Heroes League. So Kamza, that was created here in Ghana, that was nothing. It's now being played by US kids, and it's teaching them Chale, this and that and that and that. So EdTech is still evolving. And this particular service we will be launching within Ghana and probably looking for experiment, like early adopters, to see how this goes. Then we can transcend into teaching them how to create characters, how to put characters into existing worlds. We are also building a world builder. You guys were talking about traffic on the way when I was coming. I'm like, I used to build, play SimCity. We use games to actually plan your town. You see somebody's town running nicely, then today the headline will be like, someone needs water in the village. Then my friend will go and supply water. For me, maybe I've not even dug the pipe yet to go in. So when the news come, I need water. I need food. You will see the different aptitudes at play. Yeah. This is what games do. It simulates everything before you bring it into real life. Yeah. So if let's adapt it. There's a story. Supercell is one of the biggest game companies globally. It's a Finnish-based company.
Yeah.
They got investment of $6 million from their government in 2012. Then, in 5 years' time, they made $2 billion and paid 3% taxes back to their
government. So it's a win-win. So
$6 million gave them like $154 million. You know, so I think someone needs to start thinking about that at policy level, at economic level, and at the financial level. We can make it succeed.
What wonderful. President, let me come back to you. We've spoken a lot about the upsides, but there are concerns, and maybe you can run us through what some of the potential challenges or drawbacks of using gamification in education, whether in Ghana or on the continent or globally.
Yeah, when it comes to the continent of Africa and Ghana, there's always a lot of challenges when it comes to education. So we're still at the very early stages in terms of implementing these strategies or interventions in our educational systems. But the biggest drawback, I think, is access to technology.
Okay.
We're just talking downstairs that how many schools have situations where each student has access to a laptop?
Yeah.
This is in Accra. Let's go back to the rural areas. It's practically non-existent. So imagine we don't have devices, there's no internet connection. We don't even have trained teachers. So we have a lot of drawbacks. If you're going to implement gamification in, let's say, math, and the teacher who is going to teach that particular topic has not been trained on how to use these tools, they're not going to have the confidence to be able to help students also understand the concept. Also, as Ayram says, it's not culturally sensitive. All the games we see are westernized. We don't see anything about Sekwanase or the games we used to play growing up. Even when we were in school, maybe we used Mavis Beacon to learn how to type. Mavis Beacon was a completely foreign introduction. We couldn't relate to most of the things that we saw. So sometimes it also affects the level of engagement, because a child is not seeing something they can relate to. Mm-hmm. Maybe they would play the game once, twice, three times, and then they're just like, I'm not able to engage, mm-hmm. and then they'll pull out. And in the same instance as well, if we don't have the teacher training,
okay.
how do we go back to be able to help our teachers understand the concept and then train our students? And making sure that first, we're also hitting different developmental milestones, like I said earlier. And one major thing for me is also our cultural perspective.
Uh-huh.
So imagine, as Aaron was saying, his wife said, why are you allowing the kids to play for so long?
I know parents who don't want
to. Exactly. We still have that cultural mindset where it's very difficult for us to align play with learning serious subjects. Because mm-hmm. you sometimes find parents saying, my child plays too much games on their devices, they're not spending much time learning. But this can be turned around in a way where this is something they already love to do. So why don't you introduce that to whatever they have to study?
Okay.
And it just gives you the same level of engagement yep. and the same level of results.
Mm, yep.
So if we're able to, on the formative level, really go back to the drawing board and say, these are the advancements across the world.
Okay.
If we want to have kids being able to compete on a global scale,
mm-hmm.
then we really need to go back and make structural changes.
How would you answer? I mean, this is just, I'm just piggybacking on what you're saying. Mm-hmm. So how would you answer the question of balance? Because of course you don't want to tilt it one way at the expense of that. So how do you ensure balance to ensure that, okay, you want these kids to learn, you want them to have access to devices and all, but you also want to draw this balance where they now don't live their entire lives like, on that screen. You want them to develop wholly.
Yeah. Yes, that's what I wanted to chip in, that don't get it wrong that they should play throughout. Because we also regulate at some point. Even me, I sometimes get concerned. So balance is very necessary.
Mm-hmm.
Play is not only digital. Game design can also be, it's mostly physical.
Yes.
So every game that is digital was first made as a paper prototype, was mm-hmm. first played on the board before digitizing mm-hmm. it. So you should also allow them to go out, ride bicycles, play with sand, feel the sunlight, mm-hmm. play soccer, and come back, like do swimming. What I use to control time is an app that I'm able to use to set time, like 2 hours a day throughout the week. Then I block all apps.
Okay.
They can mm-hmm. ask permission. Like mm-hmm. when they play and the 2 hours is up,
mm-hmm.
yeah.
it blocks the tablet and it only shows my games to them to play. Then you also, like, sometimes they can come, daddy, please give me small time. Oh, I want to just play 15 minutes. So you can control all that. You can track the websites that and they visit.
Check their screen
the
time.
Ads, like the cyber, there's this kid security in the cyber security aspect. People, they chat with people on Roblox that they don't know. So you have to guide them on child safety.
Yeah.
Don't just chat mm-hmm. strangers online okay. and educate them yeah. on all those things. And there are apps that can make you be that detailed okay. and manage everything.
All right.
Yeah.
Just to piggyback off what mm-hmm. Aram said, it's very important that you also have a conversation with your children, because first things first, they're going to be on their devices anyways. So how are you ensuring that they're safe online? Sometimes we have students where maybe they're playing a game where they're having to interact with people on another part of the world.
Mm-hmm.
You need to inform them of safety regulations, how to be able to protect themselves online and to prevent themselves from having predators or
mm-hmm.
online, maybe even child traffickers yes. interacting with them, because it's a very serious issue. Yes. And we end up having a lot of kids who start off playing games online, and next thing we know, they're involved in something else.
Mm.
So we really need to have conversations on how to make sure that it's friendly for young people to go online.
Wonderful. So listening to EdTech Monday, today we are talking EdTech and gamification. We want to understand how to enhance student engagement using interactive learning solutions. My guest, Maximus Ametogo, founder and CEO of Esports Academy, Aram Teria, CEO and co-founder of Leti Art, and Priscilla J. Mensah, a mental health and well-being specialist. Priscilla, let me stay with you. Let's talk about measuring the effectiveness of gamified learning. How can schools measure the effectiveness? Parents, educators, how can we ensure that this new tech we are introducing students to is actually working and they are improving as they go along?
So every new tool needs data.
Okay.
Through data, you're able to assess how well the tool is being used and the different intervention strategies that you need to employ.
Okay.
So with EdTech tools, thankfully, there's a lot of analytics that you can derive from.
Yeah, the magic word.
That you can derive from these platforms. So imagine maybe as a French teacher, mm-hmm. you're using Duolingo mm-hmm. as a way to help your students engage more in the classrooms. You're able to tell their progress. You're able to tell how much time they're spending on the app. You're able to even tell where they're at in terms of being able to grasp certain concepts. So it helps you understand if the child is engaging with the content, if okay. they're able to understand the concept or the topics you're discussing.
Yeah.
And even observation. Sometimes if you're playing games in the class, I work with a lot of students that love to play Kahoot.
Yeah.
So imagine they could be learning the most boring concept. The moment you turn it into a Kahoot, you should see,
they get excited.
You should see how everybody just turns into a different person. Young people have the natural tendency to be curious.
Yep.
They love competition. Mm-hmm. They love to achieve something.
Yeah.
So the moment you put those psychological elements into education, you're still going to get the same reaction. You see them working together, trying to figure out the answers to this or how to even develop something. And through these elements, it doesn't become something that is tedious or boring anymore. Okay. It's still the same French lesson, but now it's more interactive, it's more immersive. Everyone is feeling included because the different learning styles are being employed.
Mm-hmm.
So all these things contribute to the learning experience of that particular individual or that classroom.
Mm, yeah. Wonderful. Great. Aram, let me bring you in. So how do educators ensure that the gamified learning experiences align with the curriculum goals and standards?
Yes, I think she mentioned something, monitoring and evaluate, like analytics.
Yeah, the analytics.
That's what you track to make sure that you are actually addressing what you intend to do. Like okay. we've done work with huge NGOs, global NGOs, who have been bold enough to adopt gamified apps for some of their advocacy purposes. It's new, right? So the monitoring and evaluation, every organization has their key target point that they want to reach. So you work with them during the design and make sure that these key analytic points are put in the game. Let's say they want to ensure that, we did something, we had a platform called the Hot Seat with MTN about some years back. We had a lot of different kind of games like maths, science, and all that. Quizzes. It was like a Who Wants to Be a Millionaire game. And when you look at the data there, you realize that, okay, this you were teaching this topic here. But when it gets to calculus, they are not able to go beyond it. Maybe the questions are too difficult.
Mm-hmm.
Then you go and change the questions and then you deploy again, right? We did some work with USAID on Hello Nurse, right? And we also did My Jolly. Mm-hmm. All these, My Jolly with the Netherlands Embassy,
mm-hmm.
and we also worked on another one. Like My Jolly now is being deployed in the Netherlands,
okay.
right? Called Shokri for Eritreans living in the Netherlands.
I see.
It's a sexual reproductive game. And there are some key elements that we want to communicate, right? Safe sex, like choosing your partner, right? Empowering mm-hmm. ladies to do more. All those things. The funder has those key things that you need to measure. So the analytics need to address that at this point, you are addressing this particular topic,
mm-hmm.
right? And the French Embassy also has been quite supportive in growing this esports and investing in esports and game development. All these things give us some extra room to be able to experiment with different demographics. So educators need training first to understand this. And that is what we are doing now. We want to embark on a big school outreach this particular year. Both students, playing, and educators. Teaching them about game design, game development, and also how to monitor existing games to
to be more effective in delivering what you are teaching. So that is the key. You just have to know that analytics is key. Mm. You can't judge from just watching. No. You need to look at the data.
See the numbers.
See the numbers. Never lie. And then you can evaluate and reiterate and make it better.
Okay. Yeah. Maximus, let's talk about the role of technology in facilitating gamified learning experiences and what some of the trends are in the field.
Yeah, so for the basic people, for when you talk about gamification, of course you have the tech and the technique, right? So it's one physical and then virtual. With the technology, we mentioned a couple of them. So how you can simulate a subject, you know, okay, using a gaming system. So the storyline, the environment that you design, the various levels in the game, you know, the score, and then leaderboard and all that throughout the whole process. So if I want to learn language, so you mentioned it. So you mentioned various language apps that we have. I'm sure Aram will develop a local language later. So I have the Puzzle Scout, African Legends, and all that, teaching you various things, life skills, problem-solving abilities, and all that. We have the Clash Royale that we play. It's a strategy game. You have the football game that we also play. Mm-hmm. So you have to understand the chemistry and the formation, mm-hmm, yeah, and the various games, yeah, and all the teams and how they play to be able to be effective in playing even a football game. We have the Candy Crush, all those matching colors. So we have different genre of games that you can deploy when you want to gamify learning or you want to teach a particular life skill. The issue is that we don't have a lot of the development localized, so that if I want to learn about maybe Cape Coast Castle or Kakum Park, yeah, then it's virtualized, so that I can tour the Cape Coast Castle without going there physically. Mm-hmm. I can see the Golden's too, you know, 3D, panning mm-hmm. it and all that without, you know, touching it physically. Okay, I can learn so many things virtually without going there. So the virtual space creates the virtual classroom, no blog. If it's textbooks that you want to, you know, treat in a virtual space, just one. You build a virtual classroom, mm-hmm. and a million people can access it remotely wherever they are. You can even access the students using those platforms. People use simulation to do operations. They use simulation to the mechanical engineers now can build, you know, equipment and all that using simulation. You don't need to buy the physical equipment or 3D print some of them.
Relu.
Okay. Yeah, so Relu has something like that. I think Relu also did a 3D virtual tour of the rig, the oil rig. So now you can tour the whole oil rig
without being there
physically. Okay. So you can even use to train under the sea, on the ship, the pipelines, everything made in Ghana.
Yeah,
I see.
So we have all that. We need to localize the learning. But as for the games and all that, we have thousands, if not millions, of them. And the key one is the Minecraft we have been talking about. Children learning, you know, how to collaborate, to create environment, to create building structures, shapes. You need to understand physics, math, and all that to be able to play games like Minecraft. Mm. So for me, the technology is there. We need to localize the technology so that it becomes culturally relevant. And of course, building on our heritage. So we'll be able to identify with the characters and the elements in the game.
Wonderful. So listeners, EdTech Monday on City 97.3 FM. My guests, Maximus Hametogo, Aram Teria, and Priscilla J. Mensah. Let's take our Vox Pop. We'll hear from some teachers and students, and they share their perspective on gamification in education.
First of all, gamification is one of the interactive ways to make sure that the lesson is fun and to keep students engaged. And so for me, I always introduce a game after a lesson has been taught to reinforce understanding of the concept and also to help with retention of the material learned. The changes in students' behavior and performance are numerous.
One of them is that it has improved their collaboration with their peers and also their tolerance of each other in the classroom, because sometimes I put them in teams to play against each other. And so they have learned to work well with each other. I have also noticed that their participation and motivation in class has improved. Their critical thinking skills and problem-solving skills has also improved, and it has helped tremendously in their retention of the material taught as well. So I think that if an educational game is to be designed, first of all, it has to be in line with the learning objectives. For example, if you want your sixth graders to learn about main idea and to learn about author's purpose and tone in a text, whatever game you are designing has to align with those concepts in ELA. And then also, a game has to be engaging, okay, so that the students have rewards, they have badges and certifications for every success or every level they are able to pass in the game, and so that they are engaged and they enjoy playing. Also, the game has to be challenging, because our modern learners are spared by challenges. And so if they don't find the game challenging enough, they'll not be encouraged to play and chalk all those successes. So it has to be challenging enough for their levels. First of all, before introducing the game to them, during my lesson preparation, I look for games that have a particular skill that I want the learners to attain at the end of the lesson. And then also, after the game session, I engage in a discussion with them to see whether the game has reinforced the concepts that we have taught in class. Sometimes I give them flash quizzes, as I call them, to see how well they have understood the concepts through the games. So in recent times, many of these online game platforms require that you subscribe to a yearly payment or a monthly payment plan for you to play the game consistently, and that has been quite challenging. Also, finding various games to achieve diversity so that these kids don't get bored of playing one game throughout is a little challenging, because there aren't many games out there. And so personally, I always rotate between IXL platform, ABCR platform, and then the numerous board games I have for my phonics lessons and activities.
This is how I use gaming in my lessons. So first, I'll set the objectives of the particular lesson I'm going to teach. I'll make sure that the game is tailored to that particular lesson, and all the rules and regulations are clear in that particular lesson. So for example, when I'm teaching the elementary students, like say we have something called Chinese bingo, Mandarin bingo. If I'm teaching them animals, okay, the words are going to be in the bingo. So the student is going to be supposed to look for the animals that I call out. And at the end of the lesson, at the end of the game, I'll ask them whether they can remember some of the animals. So that's how I use gaming in my lesson. So the changes I've noticed in the students using gamified elements is that they are more interactive, okay? They're willing to pay attention in class, and they also have what retention. They're able to remember the stuff that we learned during the previous lesson. That's the change I've noticed in the students using particular gamification. The key factors in designing an educational game is that you have to have your objectives very clear. Make sure that all the game actually goes in line with what's your lesson, not just a game that the students have to have fun. So, example, you're teaching economics, you're talking about Monopoly. There's a game called What's Monopoly. Make sure that the Monopoly game you're going to inculcate in your lesson actually goes in line with the lesson, not a fun game for them to play. And make sure that when you have it, you have the rules and regulations set. The students know what the rules are of the game, the questions that are in line with the game that we just played. Okay, so the questions will have things that the students have already done during the game. That's a form to know whether they actually learned something during the game or just a game that was for fun. That's a way to know whether the students actually learned during the gaming process. And also, when we are done, I make sure that the rules and regulations is very set during the game. So they know that when they are done, they know that, okay, I'm supposed to go upon these particular rules. If you are not doing according to that particular rule, the punishment and the rewards are also clearly stated. Even though gamification is very important, I have faced some challenges when I'm doing this particular teaching method. So one of the challenges is that the students that lose during the games are not willing to participate again. They feel bad, they don't want to participate again. So getting them to participate again is quite challenging. So that's one of the challenges that I face. And another challenge is that some of them are just so quick to finish the game. Okay, they're just so happy, they don't finish the game quickly, but then they don't retain the knowledge that was learned. So when we have our next lesson, I'm asking them questions, they don't really remember what was being done. So that's it. That's one of the challenges I face during gamification process.
Using games in my studies makes my studies more enjoyable, because games help me to pay attention more and they help me to understand what I'm learning much easier. So in one of my ELA classes, we're studying main ideas, and it was very difficult for me to understand how to find the main idea of a passage. So my teacher introduced me to this game, which provided the passage and two different sentences in a quiz form. It was a time-bound activity, so I had to match the main idea to the passage. And it helped me understand main ideas very simply. So I received personalized certificates for completing difficult levels, answering questions very fast, and being able to understand the overall topic. And I also earned personal satisfaction knowing that I've understood a topic fully. I prefer interactive games because, personally, textbooks can be quite boring, and I find it hard to concentrate fully when I'm reading from a textbook, and I end up zoning out. When I'm playing games, I often lose track of time, and I'm able to take my time and understand the topic well with games that are suited for me. So in one of my ELA classes, my classmates and I were doing a game that helped us for revision, and we're shocked to know that we had spent more than 3 hours on that educational game, and no one even wanted to stop.
Personally, I think using games in my studies will make it more enjoyable because they keep my mind interacted with whatever I learned in school. Through the games, I'm able to understand what I learned in school much, much more better. And through that, when I get to an examination, whatever I learned in class, it's quite simple for me to answer the questions. Once in physics class, we're learning about the kinetic theory of matter. And then I didn't quite get the understanding of that topic. So I went on to use a website called FET Simulation, and it created a visual picture of what kinetic theory of matter is. By boiling water in an enclosed space, it showed how the particles of water moved with respect to the change in temperature. And through that, I was able to understand how matter moves. So the kind of reward in educational games that reward me the most is the experience points. This motivates me to keep on being committed to those games. The leaderboards too that these games have encourage me to do my best to move on ahead, else I'll be left behind. These type of rewards encourage me to do my best in these educational games. I prefer learning through interactive games over textbooks. These games engage my mind a lot. Textbooks, mostly when I read textbooks, I don't get the understanding. I have to go to YouTube videos to find a better understanding to what I read. But through the games, I'm able to get a better understanding and even get more out of what I learned from the games. So I remember once I was using the Duolingo language learning app, and then I was studying French. So I started studying French for like 3 hours straight, and I didn't know. After I was done, it was told to me that you had studied French for 3 hours, and that was good progress to me because I learned a lot of new words, which was a plus.
So that those were some thoughts of some teachers and students who have employed the use of gamification in their learning, and they are sharing their wonderful stories. They are from the International School of Accra. So, I mean, if you are listening to us and you wanted a very practicalized, or you wanted some testimony, right, hardcore living testimonies of this, you heard students and teachers there. Let me welcome my guests. My guests are still here: Maximus Ametogo, Eram Teria, and Priscilla James. I'll be wrapping it up in a bit. Let's walk through our final questions. Let me get to Eram and Maximus. Let's talk about the strategies that educators can employ to ensure that edtech and gamification initiatives align with the evolving needs of the future workforce, because all of these things is to ensure that the students produced can work, you know, can make something of themselves, and they are relevant to the ever-changing job environment. So how can we do that? How can educators ensure that edtech and gamification will produce students who will be relevant in the evolving workspace?
So the first one is to engage industry guys like Ayram, right? So that they and myself and Priscilla, right? Yes. So that we understand how we can treat the same content material in a virtual way, in a gamified way. And like I said, whether the technique they're using may be very passive and unnatural in quote, okay, or
the technology that we need to use to deploy the same learning experiences. So talk to the industry people, and then they will show you how to do that.
Okay.
You can learn math either by counting balls instead of writing it, right? Counting balls, mm-hmm. different colors of balls and all that. Or, okay, you bring a pocket of something, blocks. Let children count the number of blocks in the same pocket. They are learning math instead of writing 1 + 1 = 2 on paper every time. Right, so we need to get that on the way. The teacher must also find a way of, you know, teaching the same subject in a different interactive and immersive way than mm-hmm. the usual. Okay, if you don't do that, then you come and be writing on the blackboard, repeat after me, and it's the same thing. And they, you know, the issues that they don't seem, they always don't understand, but we still use the same approach. So let's gamify it. Let's build them into levels. Let's start from level 1, level 2, level 3. If this one, the person qualifies from level 1, you give the person a gold badge or a bronze badge. The next level, you give the person a star. You know, so trying to reward them for the effort. And it builds that psychological, you know, boost in them. So we need to learn that. And for the future, a lot of things will be virtualized. In fact, when you even talk about the future, the present is being done, right? So people are learning how to build cars virtually. They are learning how to do operations virtually. They are learning how to, you know, build buildings virtually. Robots and everything. They can simulate life on Mars and anywhere virtually. It's being done now. So the future is already waiting for us. We have to build the workforce and then the students to be relevant in the future. And technology is not going to go anywhere. It's going to be improved. You may be shocked that even but in 5-10 years time, the virtual reality we are talking about will be a different, you know, a technology altogether. And we need to get people ready for that.
And the teachers or the educators should also have the exposure and knowledge. And you can get that by interning or associating with the community to know the sort of jobs that are out there. I've been saying that we need to write new titles. Like if you come to Leti, there are gameplay programmers. Like people, I am a game developer on my passport. When they ask, what job do you do? I say, I'm a game developer. It'll be like game developer, you know. We need to write new titles, not the normal doctor. You can be doctor of games. Yes, I need someone doing PhD of video games. Yeah, you know.
Yeah.
So they need to experience that by interning. And the key point is behavioral change. You need to track that this has impacted positively.
Okay. Mm.
And gaming does that perfectly. I remember for me, the turn graph, sine graph, they were confusing for me, but it was through video games I got to understand that the turn graph never touches the line. And Newton was right. It never, or whatever scientist was right, right? So I think gaming are the only tangible ways to break down concepts, right? And to wrap it up, Pythagoras theorem has been a theorem that a lot of people don't understand. In video games, Pythagoras' theorem is simply shooting a bird. How to calculate the distance between you and the bird, and you get the angle. That is Pythagoras' theorem. So if you use that analogy to teach the game, kill the bird. In the gaming, it's like shoot the bird or shoot the bird down.
Yeah.
Right? It's not this hypotenuse plus adjacent plus. You know? So yeah, that's right. What.
Presley, just you get the final word. Let's talk about how we can use interactive learning solutions and gamification to close skills gap and then promote lifelong learning.
So, just piggybacking off what Aram said, it's more of the application of the skill. Sometimes we see these very difficult theories, and it's just a hassle for people to kind of relate.
Mm-hmm.
But if you say you have to shoot a bird and figure out the distance and the angle, and that alone just gives you that experience.
Okay.
So listening to the voice pop, someone said they struggled with a particular topic for a while until they had to go through the process through gamification, and then they were easily able to understand. So in terms of closing the skills gap, the most important thing is is education.
Okay.
And how do we get people to stay educated? By motivating them to be in school. So when you have systems where education is now fun, they're being entertained whilst they're learning, they're hitting different achievement targets, like Maximus said, maybe they're getting a gold badge, a silver badge, they're able to showcase that to their friends to show the level of expertise they're at.
Okay.
There's that higher motivation to stay in school. And the more they're staying in school, getting the right knowledge, they grow up to become contributing members to society. And also with gamification, there's a lot of data that can be derived from those processes. We're able to use that to change policies. If we can tell that at the end of, let's say, 3 years of a particular group of students using this method, this was the result, it can be good enough information for policies to be changed in that direction. And also, most importantly, it's meeting the needs of different learners. So at the end of the day, we know that there are a lot of children that learn in different ways. Their cognitive abilities are very varied. If you're creating these game systems that help children learn at their own pace or understand the different learning styles that they have and using those styles to help them achieve a particular goal, everyone is included. No one is left behind.
Right. Wonderful. And on that note, we end the April edition of EdTech Monday. But we have a message asking for their contact. Okay, we'll send you that on our WhatsApp number. Let me say thank you to my guest, Maximus Ametogo, founder and CEO of the Esports Academy, Aram Teria, CEO and co-founder of Leti Arts, and Priscilla Ejiment, a mental health and well-being specialist. Many thanks for tuning in. My name is Nathan Kwa. We are back next month with another exciting episode of EdTech Monday, live on the City Breakfast Show, and live on City FM and Mest Africa's Facebook page.